Steve Bertrand teared up a little bit when he said the barometer was falling. Did you hear that? Sad.
I thought he was falling.
Steve,
the chair.
You're not falling, are you?
A lot going on this morning.
It's a busy day.
Juggling all sorts of things.
No, I get it. The news business is the busiest of all businesses. I understand that.
That's why we don't do it.
That's the main reason.
We're actually talking about lunch, but...
Oh, also an important business.
Where to get lunch, yeah.
Hi, everybody. I'm Bill Leff, and that's Wendy Snyder. You already knew that. Did you also know that you can reach us at 312-981-7200? Because you can.
What's going on?
I'm at a loss.
So are the Cubs.
The Cubs are at a loss. I'm scoring as many runs as the Cubs are. That's not supposed to be.
They haven't scored in two games.
It's been a long 18 innings.
They look very nervous. This is a different set of Cubbies that I said Cubby.
What happened to me? You did say Cubbies.
That sounded...
Cute, adorable little bears.
No, I don't like it.
Who aren't swinging the bats properly.
Don't they look different?
Yes. Yes, they are.
You know who I would like to blame?
Who?
The fans.
I don't know if you can blame the fans on
we
this
have
one.
All... Well, God, what has happened
we,
to me?
This is a strange time to jump on the bandwagon.
I said
ahead.
That last night as
jump
we were
on.
Watching, and Jim's like, what do you mean we?
Right.
I said, well, we're Chicago at this point. They're
right.
Representing us.
Good for you.
Still a Sox fan.
Yes.
But the big-time, full-blown Cubs fans have just been putting the pressure on, like, they're going to do it. They're going to totally do it. Now it's all of a sudden getting into their heads, and they're facing a really good team in the Dodgers.
Yes, they are.
And Larry King in the front row made them nervous.
There were innings where I didn't even watch the pitches. I was just watching Larry King's reaction.
I wanted to see what he was eating.
They had to wake him a couple of times. He dozed off. He left for a little while. I don't know where
potty
he went.
Break,
got
you
married
think?
For a little while. He came back.
Got divorced.
Yeah,
got married.
He
again.
Does that all the time. Mr. King, stop with all the weddings.
He has colored his hair because at first I thought, you know, that can't be Larry King because he's gray.
Right. No, it's dark again.
Wow.
He should have gone with Dodger Blue or Sulson Blue. He should have gone with something. I don't know.
That would have been
awesome.
Was he
eating Jell-O like at the third inning?
For a little while,
yeah.
Jell-O. And then in the fifth inning, he had some cream corn.
Okay, so he has no teeth? What's the deal?
I don't know.
And where do you get Jell-O at a ballpark? Do you bring it with?
Jell-O. Who wants Jell-O?
Do you bring
Jell-O.
It with?
No,
he stashed it in a pocket.
It's Los Angeles. They have Jell-O vendors. You can get kale. You can get carobs. Very healthy out that way.
Jell-O is not healthy.
No,
it's
Jell-O's
just sugar
not.
Water.
Jell-O's not. That's the dessert treat. And did you
when
notice,
you're in the hospital? I mean, let's be honest.
Did you notice now? Los Angeles has a reputation for people coming in late. Through the first inning, there were all kinds of empty seats all around Dodger Stadium, especially like in that camera shot. It was only half full for the whole first inning, and then people left very early too. Now, if I paid that kind of money for a ticket, I'm getting there for pitch number one, and I'm staying till the last pitch. There's no way I'm coming early. I'm leaving early. No way.
If you're paying for that ticket, you make a lot of money because you live in L.A.
Yeah, I guess.
So it doesn't really. I only saw the tail end of the Cubs game.
Yeah.
After
what was the score when you started watching?
3-0. Then right. I saw the home run that made it 4-0.
Yeah,
because we were flipping in between the periods of the Hawks game, and that thing was giving me a heart attack.
Yeah,
but that was an exciting game. And then I watched the Cubs afterwards. Sorry.
You know how they show Cub highlights after a game? The highlights reel lasted 2 seconds.
What was the highlight?
Dexter Fowler's double.
Oh yeah,
that was it. Highlights over. That's it.
I just think, you know, they were having fun. Joe Maddon was having, you know, magicians there and monkeys and crazy suit day.
We need more magicians and monkeys.
I just...
This is a time when, if we've ever needed magicians and monkeys, it's right now.
It's one thing when you're playing in the season and you're having fun and you're doing well, but now all of a sudden it's gotten real and you're going against a team who's fantastic.
No, yeah. You don't want to buckle now, though, Wendy. You
well, gotta... not buckle. But they looked very nervous to me, like all of a sudden it hit what's happening.
There was a different...
Totally different.
Although Rizzo's still doing the thing, and I...
Not hitting?
He's still not hitting. He did get a broken bat single on the infield that was kind
better
of a
than
fluke
before.
Single, but I'll take it, because parts of the bat were shooting at infielders and pitchers. It was like a horror movie. It was like Phantasm, as parts of the bat were shooting towards the infielders.
Great reference, by the way.
Thank you. So he did get a single, but he's still doing the thing, and I admire him because this is a down time. If you're a Cub fan, this is a down time. But he still watches the game with his arms around other teammates. He did that when they were winning, and now they have not been winning the last couple games. But they show him in the dugout. He still has his arm around other guys.
That's really sweet, but it's not winning the game.
No.
It's 2-1. It's a 7-game series. They are the best team in baseball.
Right. We're getting right up to the little door of the must win, aren't we?
But we're not there yet, are we?
If no. See, I am such a purist, especially with that phrase.
I know.
Must win means you have to win or your season's over, and they're not there yet.
If they lose tonight.
If they lose tonight, then the next game is
the next
ultimate must win. Yeah, every one of those games is a must
win.
That's
really a lot more pressure.
I know how they can win. I have the secret to how they can win. Do you want me to share
Can we take a break and come back?
But I do know. I figured this out last night. It's the easiest thing in the world, and I don't know why they're not doing it, and then they win.
All right. Well, hold your thought. I want to leave people in suspense. And, Frank, you know why there were some empty seats?
Yeah, I mean, 5 o'clock, which is because of the time difference, is when the game started. So
they were stuck in traffic?
Well, there may have been a lot of people who were going to the game straight from work, which delayed their arrival to the park. But I would think that's the reason why probably you didn't see people filtering into the seats until second inning or so. But please don't have Bill sing his song again, because we need this win. We need it badly. We have a problem. Only about 2 of the guys in our roster are hitting over 100 average.
Yeah.
And we do have a problem, and we have to have optimism, but I don't know. This sport is a lot physical, but it's also a mental game.
Boy,
totally.
Is that true.
I don't know if they need to watch a Rocky movie before they go out into this game, or have Tony Robbins come in and speak to them, but they need to send them straight, because, you know, Los Angeles, you got to give them credit. They are a good team. And so are we, but it doesn't matter. It's all who's the better team that day they play.
Absolutely right, Frank. And Bill has a theory on how we can win. And when we come back, we'll share it with everyone. Frank, thanks for calling. Can't wait to hear it, Bill.
All right. It's a surefire victory. You'll see. Yeah, it is. 720 WGN.
Win the World Series.
Is this too mean to play?
If you're Ryan Sandberg.
We'll do the play-by-play. Every single country in the galaxy will throw their guns away when the Cubs win the World Series.
What has to happen? Oh, Mark Grace is going to be dead, too.
No, he says something else about Mark Grace. It's Ryan Sandberg will be dead. I don't remember what he says about
I think Mark. He said we'll be long gone.
We'll be long gone? No. Oh, maybe then that does infer that he would also be dead. What a happy tune. I derived no pleasure from last night's game, by the way. There wasn't a single moment of pleasure, and that's not how playoff baseball should be. I'm sitting there going, come on, just give us something, just something to look forward to. And I mean, the thing to look forward to is obviously it's one game. They're down 2-1, as Steve pointed out. You win tonight, you turn that around, things are even. It's that simple. But still, I'm watching the game last night going, something good has to happen, right?
Not for the Cubs.
No.
For the Dodgers.
For the Dodgers, yeah.
I think right when I tuned over, Jake Arrieta had just thrown a ball that was hit out of the park quite beautifully, I might add.
Did that a couple times. All right, so here's how you fix it. Ready? The Cubs have hit in this postseason 7 home runs. 2 of them have been by pitchers, right? You stack that lineup with pitchers. I know it's unorthodox. You put a pitcher in the leadoff spot. You put a pitcher batting 2nd, 3rd, 4th, 5th, all the way down. And then in the pitcher spot, you put Chris Bryant. You're welcome. Joe Madden, so far not taking my calls.
I don't know what you do, but I just know the pressure has... It doesn't look fun. They've always looked like such a fun team. I really compared them to the Blackhawks.
Sure.
Where it's like they're out there, the camaraderie's great.
Right.
I am not seeing any of that now.
There is still some of that. Even, I know you didn't see this part because you were watching the Hawks game, but 2 of the outfielders collided yesterday on a ball that either of them could have caught, but Dexter Fowler and Jorge Soler collided. And then I went, oh, this isn't going to, first of all, they're going to drop the ball. Then they're going to be mad at each other after this because they called each other off. But no, they both stood up, or one of them stood up. The smaller man, Dexter Fowler, knocked down Soler, who's got, I think, about 25 or 30 pounds on him. He knocked him down.
When you're coming at full force, it's like a raging bull. Either one of them catch it?
Dexter Fowler.
Because I hate when that happens, when there's two guys. There was one game I was just watching, I don't know which team or what game, but the catcher and I believe the first baseman were running to get it, and the catcher just a smidge off with his mitt.
Then it becomes like a Bad News Bears scenario, and you hear Benny Hill music in the background, and nobody wants that.
And then Walter Matthau comes out.
Right.
Well, he's the one who should be coaching.
Coach Buttermaker?
Yes.
Is his name Morris Buttermaker? Let him coach.
Well, it's not over yet, I know, but we're getting pretty close to the must-win games, they play tonight?
Yeah, they'll play tonight.
And the debate's on tonight?
Yeah, at the exact same time. That's going to be
tough for Cubs fans. I'm watching the debate. I got to see that game.
Yeah.
And then
what do you imagine that's going to be like tonight? Because this is the last one. I mean, it's like a must-win game in baseball.
Yeah.
It's do or die time. So do you think either of them will change their tactic dramatically, or do you think we'll see more of what we've seen in the first two?
Well, I think the stuff that has been leaked, I think there's new WikiLeak information.
Hillary Clinton.
Yes. So I think that will be brought up. You know, really, all her issues have gone to the back burner because he can't keep his mouth shut.
Mm-hmm.
It's like if he would have chilled out, mm-hmm. I think Hillary's issues would have come to the forefront much more and he would be in a better position. But it appears every time he opens his mouth, it's something controversial. And Trump fans, I say fans because he calls them fans, right?
Yeah, he does refer to his followers as fans, yeah.
You know, they are into him. They just don't want Hillary. And I think a lot of times it's like, oh, he's just the crazy uncle, whatever. He didn't really mean that.
Right.
They just don't want Hillary so badly.
Right.
But if he would have just chilled, I think, I don't know.
No, on paper, that looks like a better tactic. But if his followers, if his fans are so fervent about him being his own man and playing by his own rules, they're getting what they want, you know?
All right, well, that's the debate and the Cubs game tonight, and we hope the Cubs win. And, Ralph, you have a solution to the non-winning problem?
Yeah, I do.
What is it?
All the Major League sports teams in Chicago, when they won, the manager had a mustache.
So
the
man needs to grow a mustache.
Has to grow his mustache and shave that stuff on his chin. That's all there is
It's not going
to
happen by tonight.
You
get plugs in your upper lip?
They don't
lip?
Do that. They don't do plugs, like, or lacquer plugs in your, like, right over your mouth? No.
Yeah,
you
can't.
No, he's
upper
already
lip.
Got a mustache, but he's got a beard growing with it. He's just got to shave the beard part, that's all.
All right, we'll get you his home number and you can call him, all right, Ralph?
Okay, you got it.
He should just for tonight until it grows in, he should have, like, one of those plastic ones that kids wear at Halloween that just kind of clips into your nose. But
those
it's
hurt.
Obviously plastic.
He does have a mustache, though, already. It's
He's
just
got
white,
stubble.
So I guess.
It's
not
a full.
It's no Wonstadt.
It's no Wonstadt.
Wonstadt didn't even have a Wonstadt.
If Wonstadt cared about Chicago, he would carefully shave off his mustache, send it to Madden, you know, with some with some spirit gum.
He could wax it off.
Or he'd offer to coach the Dodgers.
Right. That's a surefire way of winning the game.
Bertrand wins on that
Right.
one.
All right. Let's take a quick break. We've got news next. Steve has the news, and then there's a lot more show ahead. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN.
Thank you, Steve. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. And I like tooling around on Facebook. And a neighbor of mine, Carrie, posted something that kind of surprised me. Your girls, Bill, have gone away to school or on a gap year.
Right.
And Michael hasn't left yet, so next fall he will. Mm-hmm. So right now we're going through the college application process, and I read this horrific story about a mother of three from Highland Park who got a phone call. Her son was away at school. The son's roommate called to tell Sherry Warsh, your son has been rushed to the hospital. He was having chest pain, so of course a mom would freak out.
Of course.
And so she called the emergency room to get information and was told under the HIPAA laws she could not find out about her son, who was still on her insurance plan.
But he's over 18.
That's it.
Yeah.
So Rich Lankoff is our show attorney, is in the studio right now. this scared me. And I wondered, Bill, your girls, one went to Costa Rica, Kylie did, Reese went away to school. Did you guys fill out any forms? Had something happened?
I don't remember doing that.
I would have never heard of it.
Yeah.
Rich is a co-host of Legal Face Off. You can find that at WGNplus.com. And you actually interviewed Sherry Warsh?
We did. You know, when you told me about the story, Wendy, I thought it was really interesting and one I hadn't heard before. And she happens to be, ironically, an estates and family attorney here in Illinois, ironically, because, you know, she now, after learning of this incident, is telling her clients how to avoid the situation in the future. And it's really easily avoidable. You know, there's a couple of legal documents. One's a medical power of attorney. Another is a HIP authorization that, you know, literally take a few minutes. You don't even need, I hate to say this, but
you don't need
a lawyer for it. But that would prevent the situation in the future. But yeah, we had her on Legal Face Off yesterday. Really, you know, interesting story. As you mentioned, she was stepping out of the shower in her home here in the suburbs of Chicago. Got a call from her kid's roommate. Her son was a freshman at University of Michigan.
How great of the roommate to call, seriously.
Sure, yeah, presence of mind to call the mom right away. And like any parent, I'm a parent of two kids, you would think, let me call the hospital because I can't be there.
Right.
You know, I'm 500 miles away and find out what's going on. And she was immediately told by the nurse that I can't speak to you because of HIPAA, which, you know, on its face sounds like a pretty ridiculous thing to tell a parent. But in actuality, is the case. Under HIPAA, which we've all, you know, heard of and understand that it's meant to ensure the privacy of patients and avoid the dissemination of medical information by healthcare providers. Under HIPAA, basically, once your child turns 18, they're a stranger to you legally. You have no more right to their medical information than you would to any stranger on the street, which, again, seems, you know, a little strange. To your point, this person was on, this kid was on the mom's
health insurance,
and that's something that's more frequent under Obamacare, under the Affordable Health
up to
Act.
26.
But that has nothing to do with it. That doesn't mean that you have access to their records or able to talk to their doctors. Now, I will say that under HIPAA, the provider, in this case, the ER doctor, has some discretion. They can decide that in the best interest of the patient, they can talk to the mother. But, you know, in face of HIPAA being prosecuted more, being by the government going after hospitals for HIPAA violations more, hospitals are very wary to do that. They're concerned about that. So even though the doctor has the discretion to disseminate that information, they're reluctant to do so, according to HIPAA, under the HIPAA laws.
So I know I'm having knee surgery next week, and I had to fill out the HIPAA things, and it's like I could put anybody's name there who could get the information. So I put you, Bill.
Thank you.
Just That's keep track of
move.
Everything in
I
case
will.
I die.
I will.
But no, I put my husband, and I was able to sign that then. So are there forms that we can fill out before our kids go away to school? What if they go out of state? Do you have to do it here and there?
Sure. I mean, it's a pretty simple process is the good news. There's a HIPAA authorization form that, again, you could download. You could certainly have an attorney to prepare it. It's a pretty straightforward document that will specify. It's basically like a permission slip that says I, whoever, in this case it would be your son or your daughter, authorized my mom, my dad to
and Bill Leff.
Bill Leff, of course, receive information, be able to communicate on my behalf if I'm not able to. That's different from a medical power of attorney. That's also a document that you should consider that allows someone else to make decisions for you if you're incapacitated. So let's say you have a medical condition that doesn't allow you to communicate with your doctor. A medical power of attorney allows someone else, like a guardian or a parent, to make those decisions on your behalf. And, you know, the best thing to do is to have them easily accessible, obviously, right? If you have this HIPAA authorization, but it's locked away in a safe somewhere and your child doesn't have it at the hospital, it's not going to help. These are downloadable. There's apps for it. The best advice is to keep it on your phone and your child's phone so that it's easily accessible to the providers.
And able to be forwarded.
In a second.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right, that's smart.
Dave has a question, and I think it's a really good question. Dave, we're talking with Rich Lankoff about these HIPAA laws that prevent you from finding information about your children once they turn 18.
Right. Now, I understand HIPAA briefly, but, I mean, when you have a relative or a younger relative in the hospital, and then the medical people go, you know, I'm not denying information, but they go, well, mom or dad or uncle or whatever, or older brother,
what do you know about the kid? I mean, you've known him for 17, 18, 19 years. What's his your medical history, their medical history? And now they're like, well, we can't tell you what's wrong with him, but we want to know, what do you know about him? So it's kind of like, you know, who's talking to who? I mean, I understand privacy and all that, and I've done that and had to go through that. You know, even some schools won't even tell you about their school records. You know, they're like, oh, they're 18. It's their responsibility. But really? You're paying tuition. You're like, wait a minute.
Yeah, you're saying, it sounds like you're saying
$10,000 a year for a college, and you're telling me that you can't tell me why he's got this letter in his file, or, you know, some, you know, thing like that.
God, I didn't even think about that. School records, like, it's not like you can call the college and go, I didn't get the report card. Could you please send it to me?
Yeah, I mean, listen, for better or worse, the privacy laws have become stricter. I mean, HIPAA's been around for a while. And again, the intent is to avoid the dissemination without a patient's consent of their medical information. So there's a lot of benefit to it, of course, that we all enjoy in this kind of situation. Sure, you know, you would want the standards to be a little looser. And again, there is a, you know, way around, not around it, but there's a way to avoid this emergency that this right. mom was in by simply having this form.
It's another item on your to-do list when the kid's going off to school to make sure that, you know, all your ducks in a row and your paperwork and emergency contacts, things like that. I mean, when you think about colleges, be it small or large, it's a whole other community, and hoping somebody like this other person, his roommate, had enough.
Yeah, that kid should be just applauded for his jumping in.
It's quick thinking.
It really is. Yeah. Dave, thank you so much for calling. And there are a list of items that you need to do before you go to college. I'm just learning that now for my kids. You've been through it.
Sure.
But this is something I had never known about. HIPAA authorization form and a medical power of attorney. Do either of these need to be notarized?
No, the HIPAA authorization doesn't have to. It's just a simple form. Doesn't have to be notarized.
You'd sign it, and your child obviously would also sign it.
Correct.
Right?
Yeah. And that again simply is a permission slip that allows. It's you know, it's there's some language in there that you need, but it's fairly straightforward language. Again, you don't have to have an attorney for it. I haven't looked, but I bet if you Google it, you'd find, you know, lots of different forms available for it. And that would suffice. You know, we use it frequently in my practice, in personal injury law, for example, when we're defending those kind of cases. So it's a pretty common form that attorneys use regularly.
All right,
because the Consumer Reports article says you get the HIPAA authorization, which we talked about, medical power of attorney, in which case you appoint an agent to make medical decisions on your behalf. God forbid a 18-year-old's in a car accident and mm-hmm. can't speak. You're there. And they also recommended a durable power of attorney. What is that? This is an additional step.
Yeah, that's, you know, again, not really for medical issues, but more for designating someone to take care of your children's business. If you know, business, not business, I mean by an actual business, but
like,
you know,
medical bills or something like that.
Bills, you know, other kind of bills, credit cards, that kind of thing. So that's an additional step that parents could take to, you know, maybe assert a little more control when your kids are away from home.
All right, because I don't trust my kids with anything, no. So I don't really want to be part of that.
But it allows you some control over things like tax returns and bank accounts, like you said, credit cards.
I don't want to know. What I don't know won't hurt me. But
right.
HIPAA authorization form and the medical power of attorney, those will work. Do you get them in both states if you have like when Kylie went to Costa Rica, would you have to fill it out here in Illinois and get the Costa Rican version of it?
You know, the form that you fill out, that you complete where you live, should suffice. You know, in foreign countries, Puerto Rico, you know, is questionably a foreign country. There might be some issues. Certainly, if you're traveling, you know, some other remote areas, you might want to consider. I would recommend that you consider what those countries use in these circumstances.
And call the consulate there.
Call
probably,
the consulate.
Right? A lot of kids are taking gap years in
right, and you know, HIPAA is an American law. Obviously, okay. You know, they might not recognize it there. They might have their own laws.
Right.
But certainly, you know, the HIPAA authorization for medical power of attorney, those are good starts.
Thank you for shedding some light on this, and thanks to my neighbor, Carrie Nutter, because I would have known nothing about this. Rich Lankoff, Legal Face-Off, his podcast on WGNplus.com. We'll continue with more entertainment-y type things when we return. It's Bill Leff, Wendy Snyder, 720 WGN.
It's Bill Leff, and it's Wendy Snyder. Rich Lankoff is here. He's our legal counsel here on the show.
That keeps him up very late at night. He's also one of the hosts of Legal Face-Off, our podcast here on WGNplus.com. Rich, years ago, I don't know if you've seen this or remember this, but on L.A. Law, there was an episode where a Bears fan wanted to sue Mike Ditka because the team didn't return to the Super Bowl. They had just been in one Super Bowl and won it, and then he was suing him because he didn't get him into another
one. Is that what you're
going
to do?
I think I may sue the Chicago Bears.
Not a bad idea. By the way, Arnie Becker was my motivation for going to law school.
Oh, was he really?
Absolutely.
Corbin Burnson's character?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
That was a great show.
Loved L.A. Law.
Some of our sports teams are in the news from a legal standpoint, not necessarily for the good in some cases. Let's talk about the W situation over at Wrigley.
Yeah, the Cubs and Major League Baseball filed a lawsuit in federal court about a month ago in anticipation of the playoffs in an effort to protect their trademarks. As we all know, there are plenty of enterprising individuals out there who may be selling T-shirts, other products with unlicensed logos.
And they're all
it's
out
gone
front
on
of the ballpark.
Forever, right. It's gone on forever at Wrigley. I mean, if you walk up to Wrigley, you'll see as you get closer, the logos get a little maybe better, but the ones farther away, you know, are just
hideous.
A little, looks like they've been Xeroxed a million times.
Yeah, right.
But that's a tradition. I mean, you know, you go to concerts either here or other places and you'll see the guy selling, you know, knockoff T-shirts out of a garbage bag for $10 afterwards. Well, the Cubs and Major League Baseball have joined together to prevent that. In fact, in the lawsuit, which I read, they actually attached photos of these individuals selling selling garbage bags of product.
Most
as
wanted.
Examples. Yeah, as examples of the types of things. So now I've been to, you know, the Cubs playoff games the last couple rounds, and it's noticeable. You will see the vendors out there,
yeah,
but they are avoiding using the W. They're avoiding using the Cubs logo, 1908. There are certain things that they can't use.
So the Cubs were able to somehow protect a letter of the alphabet.
Right.
That belong. That
that
is
doesn't
there,
seem right.
It's very hard.
In
how
fact,
did they pull that off?
Yeah. In fact, I believe a number of years ago, it's been a while since they have protected the W in and of itself. So. Yeah.
And does it have to do with the look of the W? Because if you look at like a Washington Nationals hat, there's a W on their hat.
What about a Walgreens right across
Walgreens,
the street, which looks like the Nationals
right.
W?
Yeah. What about George W. Bush, who was called W?
Right.
What about all, what about all of them?
Yeah, they don't have a legal protection over the word or the letter W
right.
in all of its uses, simply the way it's used
with
in terms
blue
of the blue background, the white,
the font.
For the Cubs. So, yeah, you could still use W, but not in that manner.
Can I somehow secure the letter U for uh-oh? Is that a possibility?
I think you're onto something.
All right, I may do that.
You might be
try
onto something.
Try not to suck, Bill.
No. What about that? Is that protected, that phrase from Joe Madden, that
listen,
try
all,
not to suck? Is
all that stuff. It was the 20th anniversary this week of the rant by Denny Green. You know, the Bears are who we thought they were.
Yeah.
If you want to crown them, crown their blankety blanks.
He was the Minnesota Vikings head coach.
Right,
at the time.
Who famously went off on a rant, one of the great post-game rants in NFL history. And he protected that. I mean, right away he went to file a trademark on that quote. So
yeah.
You see it more than ever, you know, as these things become part of the lexicon,
yeah.
People want to protect them so they can make money off of them.
Because Bill Murray had that Goat Busters shirt on,
yeah.
And I don't know if that's sanctioned or not. I bet it's going to be soon because it's perfect for him.
Yeah.
I ain't afraid
right.
of no goats.
I know.
Yeah, I've
I
seen
know.
A lot of those T-shirts around, different variations, so someone hasn't protected that one quickly enough.
There's also shirts of just a picture of a very docile-looking Bill Murray. Does
right.
he get a piece of that? I hope he
oh,
does.
Oh, definitely.
I don't think he is,
doesn't?
But maybe we could, you know, make a phone call and... Get that protected.
Sure, that makes sense. Now,
the question for all of this, I mean, it's just, you know, it's basic common sense. It's a question of how much resources you have to fight it and how much effort you want to put into it. The reality is the Cubs and Major League Baseball, are they going to go out and sue, you know, an individual who's making these T-shirts in his basement? Probably not. But the goal is, in fact, been accomplished because they're not around anymore.
Yeah.
Just the threat of going after them is generally enough in these areas. So... that's the goal of Major League Baseball and the Cubs.
I would like you to come back another day. And Bill and I were talking about this off the air. Remember, we were talking about Melissa McCarthy, and she had lost all that weight. And a listener called and said that's why she was taken off the Mike and Molly show.
Right.
And that's not true. We asked where she read it. You read it on the internet, on Facebook.
Sure.
You click on the story, and it's an ad for Garcinia. How do you
Cambogia.
Say it? Yeah, I don't know how to say that. You say it better. Huh. But that doesn't seem fair that they can use a celebrity endorsement without their endorsement. So in a later episode, we have to explore that a little bit.
Sure, they can't. I mean, the short answer is they can't. And there's actually a couple of recent examples of celebrities who have successfully sued to prevent that. But yeah, I'd be happy to come back. It's, you know, it's pretty interesting stuff. You can't. I mean, the question again comes down to how much the celebrity wants to pay and how much time they want to invest to protect their image. But
it's
listen,
worth
for
it
a lot of celebrities,
of, people.
Of course, it's definitely worth it.
You know, the offshoot of that is, and Wendy and I have discussed this before, online you'll see something that'll say, celebrities you didn't know were dead, but they're dead.
Right.
And then it'll be a picture of a guy who's not dead. It'll be that guy's in
the famous, the Ava Gota standard.
Right. Well, he is dead. So
but
he is.
Sure?
He, I'm positive.
But like
dead.
Just putting like Kirsten Dunst
right.
or something. And
can't do that.
And she's not dead, but it's clickbait and it's getting you
right.
in there. I guess celebrities can sue to be off that too, but yeah,
there's a lot of recent examples of companies using celebrities without their agreement for endorsements. And I'm talking like not just, you know, major endorsements for,
yeah.
there was one for a perfume that they were using. I think, I forget who it was, but using her for a while for a campaign, and it took some time to end that. But right. If you're a celebrity, I think it's important obviously to pursue that to avoid,
sure.
exploitation
Michael
of
Jordan
your,
and the Dominic Stakes.
Exactly true. Right.
Yep. Good precedent. Rich, thank you.
Thank
we
you
appreciate
very much.
It. And real quickly, your Gloria Allred in, interview is coming up when?
Yeah, we should have it on today on our podcast, Legal Face Off on WGN Plus. We will have Gloria Allred discussing her representation of a couple of the Trump accusers. One of them was a former contestant on The Apprentice who has formally stated that Donald Trump sexually assaulted her, Gloria Allred, who has been a guest before on Legal Face-Off, most prominently talking about her representation of the Bill Cosby accusers. She'll be on talking about Trump and these alleged victims.
Rich's podcast can be found. It's Legal Face-Off at WGNplus.com. Thanks, Rich. Appreciate it.
Thanks very
it.
Much.
Thank you.
News is next, and then more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Bill Leff, Wendy Snyder. Thank you, Steve Bertrand. Lovely job. Dr. John Duffy in the studio with us. He's a regular contributor to the show, and we thank you for coming back. How's everything?
Things are great. Thanks for having me back.
John, we were talking about this off air, and we have more important things to discuss with you, certainly. But
clearly.
There are people walking around the city a little bit on the sad side today.
Yeah.
It all started a few nights ago, but it's carried over.
Right.
Please reassure us. Things are going to be okay again.
Well, I believe things are going to be okay again. Now, you
that's because you're a Cubs fan. As a doctor.
As a doctor, here's what I'll say. I think sometimes you see anniversary effects. So if you think about this time last year, the Cubs are in the process of getting swept by the Mets.
Yep.
And I think we're starting to feel like that, that familiar feeling
it's
of,
you
know, like,
year again.
Yeah, this might be happening again. So I felt it myself a little bit. I thought like, ooh, there's hopelessness, even though it's a 2-1 thing, you know, and we're playing a 20-year-old pitcher tonight.
Right.
And yet there's this feeling like, ooh, this is all but over.
Sometimes,
when in fact it's not. Most teams would think not.
I know you know this, but a team will bring in a team psychologist to have a sit down with a player or two or three or maybe sometimes the whole team.
Right.
If you were given the opportunity to sit down with some of the guys that aren't producing right now, what would you say to those guys to make them realize you've done this before, you can do this again?
I think I would honestly say, you know, take yourself out of playoff mode. You know, Joe Maddon has this amazing ability to get these guys loose in most any game.
Right.
And right now you can see things tightening up, right?
Big
so they're anxious.
It's
there's this anxiety,
team.
Right? So it's like, you know, what he's been great at is getting them thinking like, this is fun. This is a game and we're good at this game, you know? And if he can get them thinking that again, then I think they can kind of get back into a rhythm. Does that mean they win every game? Not necessarily, but it certainly gives them an opportunity because they're tightening up. They're not playing like they did before.
Right.
And so I think they're part of that like fatigue and anxiety that, you know, like, ooh, yeah, this is what happens to the Cubs.
Yeah.
And he's gotten them thinking differently all year, you know, for the past couple
sure.
of years, really.
Yep. All right. I like it.
That was a great question, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
You'd be a good patient of Dr. Duffy's.
Maybe I'll start coming in. All right.
I'll leave my
Mark
card
me
right
down.
Here.
All right. You are doing a talk. Is it tomorrow night?
It is.
At Park Junior High.
Correct.
In LaGrange.
Right.
We saw the flyer up there. Tell us what this is going to be about.
Okay, so this is sponsored by the Ogden PTC Positive Schools Committee, and it is about character and emotional intelligence and strength and fostering those things in your kids.
Can I just tell you, my youngest son, Dylan, is in eighth grade, and his brother is an overachiever. He's pretty good musically, and Dylan was having a tough time trying to figure out what he enjoys. Well, all of a sudden, he starts to love writing, and he's into Stephen King. And I was up late with him last night because he had a paper to do, and we wrote. I helped a little bit, but he was just coming up with these flavorful words, and you know, with Stephen King being an inspiration, it's like in eighth grade, sometimes you don't find your niche. You don't think it's okay to be smart because your brother's been smart.
Right.
That's an important time.
It is. And if you think about eighth grade, picture when we were in eighth grade. Did we have direction in our lives?
No.
Or were we just out like playing? And, you know, like these kids are expected to find their passions.
Right.
You know, when they're 15 years old, it's an absurdity, you know? So the idea of kind of investigating, what am I good at? What am I interested in? You know, like I love this process that Dylan's going through where he's realizing, oh, I'm a good writer. I might have a different set of skills than my brother, but I've got a set of skills here. And so I'm going to play with that. And 2 years from now, it might be something else. And so the thing we do as parents is sometimes we get all the way behind the one thing. And then when that goes away, we kind of panic a little bit. Or we think like, oh, I don't want you to be a writer. You should be a finance guy. And so we don't support the thing that our kid's interested in right now. So we don't see the kind of that long vision that allows us to kind of breathe and say, okay, there's something my kid's getting out of this moment. If nothing else, self-esteem, I'm going to support this.
And you kind of have to. I mean, as a parent, and Bill, you're probably going through with this with Kylie wants to be a filmmaker. And it's like, okay, there are not a bunch of filmmakers that make a ton of money on it. What's your backup plan? But it's like you do have to support their passions. My older son, Michael, wants to be a musician. Great. Follow your dream. I will help you along. But maybe have some training in business or something that you can work on in case you're not the next, you know, Bob Dylan.
Absolutely. I think both are true. I think you can have a backup plan. I think that's important. I think it's important also to support what your kid loves and where their strengths are. And sometimes they shapeshift. So sometimes, you know, the kid who wants to be a musician ends up being an artist. This happens to a client I worked with recently who ends up being this like amazing, he was a tagger, like, you know, kind of a delinquent tagger, graffiti artist and a rapper 10 years ago. And now he's got this beautiful studio downtown he charges a lot of money for his artwork. So I think if you support your kid where they are, they find their way. If you quash their enthusiasm because you're fearful, like, oh, you're not going to be able to make a living at that. If you quash it entirely, then they don't find their way and they end up doing weird things like I did. They end up being an accountant for 7 years when
you
in fact,
were?
I worked in a large accounting firm not far from here for 7 years because, you know, I thought, well, this is what you're supposed to do.
Right.
And, you know, and effectively my parents said, yeah, you're not going to be, you know, you're not going to be a psychologist. You're going to be an accountant and that's going to be great because you're decent at math, you know?
Right.
And if I just listened to myself and I encouraged them to listen to me and trust me, I probably would have started this gig a little sooner.
It's probably, I'm guessing, not a good idea to ever tell your kid the odds. Like if a kid tells you what they want to do, you should never go, you know, only one in a million kids really survive being a professional soccer player. Let's think about something else. Right? You never want to explain to them, even though it seems realistic, avoid that, right?
I think you don't necessarily want to be discouraging in any way, right?
Yeah.
You know, I had a dad recently whose kid was rapping in the basement, right? And he was and recording these beats. And dad panicked. And he said, do you know how many people actually make it in this field?
Yeah.
And my point to the dad was, this is doing something for him right now, right? Mm-hmm. So it's filling some hole for him right now.
How old was he?
He was 15.
15, right.
That's 15 years of age.
Right,
Right. I mean, come on.
He's playing with something. He's trying something out, right? So maybe he's developing some artistic side that he'll use as a graphic designer or something one day, you know? But we panic and we think like, oh, he's just stuck on this and he thinks he's going to be Chance the Rapper.
Yeah.
If you think about 15, you know, I thought I was going to be Letterman, you know? Like, you know, I think, you know, we develop as we grow, and as parents somehow we panic and we forget. Like, oh, yeah, if I step aside, they'll figure this out, you know? But if you give them odds, sometimes it pushes them further in the direction you don't want them to go, it's counterintuitive.
Remember Lily Tomlin used to do a joke where if people really got to be the job they wanted to be in first grade, the world would be filled with astronauts, ballerinas, and cowboys. I was like, boy, that's
perfect.
That's dead on perfect.
That is absolutely true.
Yeah. John Duffy's here. Dr. John Duffy, if you have a question or a comment, you can, as I said, if you want to call us 312-981-7200, you can call us there or text us there if you have any questions or comments for Dr. Duffy.
All right. Anonymous. Someone wants to go on the air being anonymous. We don't have a voice changer, so go ahead, Anonymous.
I'm just curious why, if he knows the answer, why for adopted children are the junior high years the hardest?
For adopted children?
Yes.
Yeah, that's a good question.
Struggle with identity already is, you know, the middle school or?
You know, I've had a couple of adopted kids tell me that it's different for different kids, for sure. But I've had a couple kids tell me, you know, the first thing I know about myself is that there was some kind of rejection of me. You know, this isn't true across the board. And I think when we're in middle school, we start to generate some degree of self-awareness. When we're 9 years old, this isn't a thought in our heads. But by the time we're 12 or 13 or 14, you know, that is something that we can kind of piece together. So I think that's why we run into that in middle school. That said, on the back end of that, I have never worked with a single adopted kid, and I've worked with a lot of them, who said, like, I don't feel like my family accepts me, or I don't feel like I belong in the family I'm in. Almost to a child, I've heard them say quite the opposite. Like, you know, I feel confident that I'm in the right place and that these are the people to take care of me and this is my family.
But it's just still the, okay, that's what I assumed. I have two kids who are adopted. One's an introvert and one's an extrovert. One's an open adoption, one's a closed adoption. So you can imagine it's pretty hard to navigate.
Sure.
But I figured it comes down, and I've had them talk to people, but I figured it always came down to that. And I was thinking, my thought process was that the junior high years are tough enough because, you know, the little cliques are being formed, and if you're not sitting in there, it all goes back to the original feeling of.
Yeah, but that'll change again in high school too, won't it, Dr. Duffy?
Absolutely, right. I mean, I was going to say, like, you know, there is no tougher time in childhood than those junior high years because, right, you get the self-awareness and all the rejection takes place in junior high, and you can kind of pull things together once you're about, you know, once you hit that freshman year in high school, by and large.
Oh, good. That's good to hear.
Good luck to you.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
A text question, which is interesting, something that we were talking about before, supporting your kids' passions.
Yeah.
My daughter's ending her first semester away at college. She's studying business/marketing. Her passion is beauty and hair. She really wants to just come home and go to cosmetology school. I say she should do what her passion is. Her dad says she should just stay at school, stick it out. What's the best answer? That's tough.
It's tough. And part of it has to do with the underlying philosophy, right? So if she's going to stay at school, I love the idea of supporting your child's passions. I think if you don't do that, they're going to either get anxious and depressed or they're going to change their route somewhere down the road. So to support them now is a great idea. If your child decides that she wants to stay in school and study business, then she can kind of always think toward cosmetology because everything's a business, right? And there's reasonable support for the idea of coming home and going to cosmetology school. I think as long as you support the underlying idea that, hey, what you're interested in, we support, you've got a couple of different routes to get there, you know?
But having a degree is never going to hurt you.
No,
right?
No,
there's never a downside to having a degree.
Typically, if I'm working with a college student who's like unsure about their path, I always encourage them like, well, you may as well finish the degree and give it all you've got, and then you've got options. You've got nothing but options, you know.
Right.
Yeah, for sure.
All right. Again, Dr. John Duffy will be giving a talk Thursday night at Park Junior High. Information is on your website?
It is.
And that's, where's your website?
DrJohnDuffy.com.
Okay. And that's pretty plain and simple. So I wanted to ask you, a lot of kids, I hear parents saying, oh, kids are so entitled these days.
Yes.
It's a generation of, you know, no respect. Do you believe that to be true?
I do not believe that to be true. I get why parents feel this way, right? This is the age of Instagram, right? Our kids are all trying to be Kardashians and posing. And, you know, like, yeah. And so, this is what I hear from a lot of parents. Like, they'll spend more time trying to find the perfect pose than they will, like, helping their sister with her math homework or something like that. Or they'll be surly and angry at home, and we don't know what to do with them. Some of this is really normal teenage stuff, but I have the luxury of meeting a lot of kids who seem really bratty, really angry, surly, selfish behind closed doors. And when you talk to kids one-on-one, you realize this is a really, really kind, thoughtful generation. They're really empathetic. They designate drivers. They they really do a good job of taking care of each other. And it's admirable. And, you know, in the way they think about things like the election, like, you know, just about anything that's going on in politics or in media, they have opinions on this stuff.
Right.
They don't always express it. And sometimes we parents, because we make this assumption that, oh, you know, I think my kid's entitled, or I think my kid's kind of bratty. Our kids know we're making that assumption, and sometimes they'll just shut us out. Like, oh, you don't have faith in me? Well, screw you, then we're done, you know?
Yeah.
But when you get to know them, you realize I've yet to run into a single kid where I thought, this feels like a bad seed that doesn't care.
Right,
you know?
Right.
It just hasn't happened, ever.
I applaud how informed, I mean, I only know of my own kids and their circle of friends, but I applaud how they're very hands-on when it comes to stuff like the debates and the upcoming election. They really want to be as well-informed. The downside is one of my daughters in particular takes whatever she sees on the internet as truth, and I've tried my best to explain to her just because it's on there has no bearing on whether or not it's true.
You just learned that a couple of weeks ago.
I found that out when? A week ago today.
Right? So we're all learning this at different paces, right?
Yeah, sure.
I do think that's something that this generation has to get familiar with, is like that, you know, not everything on Slate or Reddit is actually true, right?
Yeah.
So you really have to like think through and use more than one source.
Yeah.
It's easier to get information, but not all the information's good. And that's something that our kids have to kind of catch up with.
Yeah.
This isn't fair to give you a minute to answer this, but with the upcoming election and the debate being tonight, it seems like there's just a lot of hate going on.
Yeah.
And what do we tell our kids about that and about differing views?
You know, our kids probably understand a lot about it, and they talk about it. I always encourage parents, be curious about what your kids have to say about it. So if you're I encourage parents, watch the debate with your kids tonight. And if there's
even though the material is questionable for kids.
Right. That's true. And pause once in a while and say, so what do you think about how this is going? And draw it from your kids. And you might be surprised, because kids are really emotionally astute, and they might say, this is nasty. I don't like the way they're talking to one another, you know? So you might not have to lecture them about, like, this isn't how we want to talk in our family or in this community or whatever. Our kids probably already know it. And if you draw it from them, then you've got an expert on your hands instead of somebody you're lecturing at.
But John, what about from the time our kids are cognitive at all, we explain to them how bad lying is. Lying is the worst thing. If people don't trust you, you have nothing.
Right.
And then you have two candidates up there that are kind of lying as often as they can.
Yeah.
So
right.
how do you turn that around?
So I think you think of like interesting questions to ask them, like, you know, well, how do you think this is going to work out for them?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, what do you think the end point is for all of this?
Yeah.
You know, and to draw that from them, because you're right. I mean, you know, we do teach this. This is like, you know, part of the golden rule,
right.
And you know, and we see people violating it, you know, in front of the nation and the
right.
world.
Right.
So, right, I think it's to draw as much from them as we can about, like, you know, well, what do you think of this? You know, like, because that part's not true, and we know that.
All
you
right.
know,
good.
What do you think the age range is where you're able to watch the debate with your kids? I have teenage boys. You have teenagers. I've been loving watching it with them to hear what they have to say.
Yeah.
They do have their own opinions, and they're not just regurgitating what my husband and I say.
No. I saw this great thing online, but I think it's true, where they were talking to 7 and 8-year-old kids. who had seen the last debate, the second debate, and they were just talking kind of very broadly. They'd seen snippets,
right,
and they were asked kind of like a focus group, you know, well, what do you guys think of this? I'm not sure that he or she is telling the truth, or, you know, that seemed kind of mean to me, you know? So I think even if they don't understand issue by issue what's going on, kids get a vibe.
Oh, yeah.
So I think you can watch it with them, you know, even if they don't understand precisely, you know, policy-wise, as if a lot of that's being talked about,
right,
what's going on, they can pick up on the vibe, and they might have opinions, even at very young ages, that surprise you.
Right.
You know, so give them the opportunity. That's my bias.
All right. Well, cool. He's Dr. John Duffy. You can go to drjohnduffy.com, get his book, The Available Parent. It's very helpful. And check out his podcast, which has a new name now.
Undue Anxiety.
It's on iTunes. It's also on WGNplus.com. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks, John. A quick break. Kim with the news and then more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
I noticed Dr. John Duffy was doing a little counseling with you about what's going on with the Cubs off the air. Are you okay?
Yeah, I told him, leave your phone on, because if tonight doesn't end well, I'm going to need a professional. I was so up in arms last night. When they lost 1-0 to Clayton Kershaw.
That's one.
You go, all right.
Great pitcher.
Yeah, that was a pitcher's duel. You expected a low-scoring game.
Although, is he as great when he doesn't beat the Cubs in the playoffs?
Yeah, he's just... if you had to draw up the 3 or 4 best pitchers in baseball, it's really hard to pick anybody above him. He's really good. So it would have been nice to have won game 2. We lost 1-0. Excusable. Last night, they just had nothing going for them.
Are you
going
to be freaking out if they lose tonight?
Yeah.
So if they have one win tonight.
I will be. If they win.
It's not a must win, but if they win tonight, the pressure's off a little bit on everybody.
A lot of bit. And again, they'll still have to face this guy, Clayton Kershaw, who should be banned from baseball, by the way.
Unless he's a Cub or a White Sox.
Unless the Cubs somehow sign him or the White Sox sign him, then we welcome him back with open arms. But he's doing some kind of weird voodoo thing that I don't think should be allowed in baseball. He makes the ball do things that are unnatural. So you'd still have to face him at least once and possibly twice, because if you're the Dodgers, you would find a way to get him in even another game, either as a starter or as a reliever. So, yeah, if they don't win tonight, then it's panic mode. Now I'm just uneasy, but it's not panic mode yet, but it could become that very easily.
Don't you think they just want to come back and win it all at Wrigley?
Yeah, but they lost 2 games at Wrigley before, so that's scaring me.
Yeah. Yeah. It would. Oh, we'd love to see that locally.
You can't not win and hope, you know, to sweep it then at home.
Right.
Don't you have to get some games up?
Yeah. And the sands of time are dropping quickly on that.
They just need to get the mojo back.
That's it.
Where do you get mojo? Is there a mojo store?
There's Mojo Shanty on Belmont. You could stop by there, but they're out of town, so they can't do that.
I think Amazon will deliver to them very quickly.
Next day service.
Exactly. Drone.
Yeah, right.
Drone in some mojo, although who's the guy who cut his finger droning?
Oh, the pitcher for Cleveland? Yeah, that's a mess.
A guy who is used to, he's way into drones, okay?
Yeah.
How could the propeller get you? I mean,
I don't know.
At some point.
It's mysterious. It's very, very mysterious. And by the way, we were talking about this off air. Ronnie Wu-Wu, nowhere to be found. Isn't that mysterious? Where's Ronnie Wu-Wu right now?
Right before the series started, and I can't remember if it's this round or the first round, he was at the Billy Goat.
Was he?
With a goat. I know Ro snuck the goat in. The first day, Ro couldn't get the goat in the studio.
Yeah.
The second day, the goat got in the studio, and within 5 seconds of standing in the green room, number one and number two.
That's all it took? And he starts just exploding? Great.
Not Ro, the goat.
No, I know. Oh. Although Ro has on occasion, you know the stories. You know.
So that goat has been at the Billy Goat, which I think is a health issue.
It is, isn't it?
Isn't it?
If I was not a service goat, so I don't think you can go in there.
The goats they shed a lot.
Yeah.
I was at Brookfield Zoo and saw the goats, and I had goat hair all over me. I don't want that on
they
my cheese boy.
They shouldn't be anywhere near a food.
Yeah.
Right.
But Ronnie Wu-Wu was seen down there with the goat. But other than that, how come he's not wooing.
He should be front and center.
Why? Right.
He's been, his whole life has been this.
And you know, because he's been losing his woo a little. So maybe
he had some health issues, yeah. I know. But, I mean, does he have tickets, I hope?
You know, I'm working on a screenplay, The Ronnie Woo Woo Story, with Denzel Washington. Very interested in playing the title role. You know that, right?
Yes, I do.
I'm this close to selling that. TNT is all over this. They want this so badly. I'm almost done with it. We're hoping to have it ready by Christmas.
Working title?
Woo, are you?
Woo, 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 are you?
Yeah, they're going to make
woo,
that.
Woo,
you're
going to
see.
Woo, woo. Are you going to use the extra four woos at the end?
Yeah. It's going to be a big
great
hit.
Idea.
I'm so close.
And the Blackhawks were making me crazy last night.
They almost blew a big lead.
They were up 4-2.
Was it 4-0 or 4-1? 4-1.
4-1.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, two goals ahead are great, but three is some added insurance.
Sure.
And then all of a sudden it's a tie hockey game.
Yeah.
At 4-4, and then they turned it on.
It came alive.
High scoring game.
Yeah, 7-4.
Seven. Yes. 7-4.
Very
to
high
four.
Scoring game. And a tip of our caps to Marian Hossa. It's not an easy
Holy
task
moly.
To pull off a 500-goal career. But not only has he already scored 500 goals, he's not laying down soon. He's going to keep scoring goals.
But he's injured.
Yeah, I know. He's
No, he got hurt.
I know he does.
What happened?
He did. I just heard a little bit injured. I don't know beyond that.
All right, because they, you know, he was the star of the game, yeah. as they announced at the end,
sure.
And he did not come out, and it was kind of weird.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, he was in the locker room or in the medic's cabinet.
Oh.
I don't know where he was, but he did not come out on the ice.
Well, I hope he's all right.
And I thought that he had scored his 500th the last game and tweeted that and then was quickly corrected as it was an assist.
Yeah.
And then you hit the panic button, and he got the hat trick.
Yeah, good for him. But 500, if you score 500 goals, that almost is a ticket to the NHL Hall of Fame.
Absolutely.
So,
or the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, one or the other.
Or the Nobel Prize.
Right.
Bob Dylan's not giving up that trophy to anybody.
Oh, wait, we have a woo-woo sighting. Hey, Karen?
Hi.
Where's Ronnie Woo-woo been? You've located him?
Well, I work security for the Cubs,
yeah.
and I work in the bleachers, and he was in the bleachers Sunday night because it was hilarious. People were mobbing him to take pictures.
Of course.
As Scott Darling walked innocently past and everybody ignored him.
Oh, my God.
Except for me.
So the Blackhawks right. backup goalie, Scott Darling, walks past. Nobody pays any mind to him, but Ronnie Woo has got a line of people out in front. They want his autograph.
They all want his picture. They all wanted selfies with him.
God, yeah. You know what Scott Darling should have done? He should have just turned at everybody and started wooing and stole everyone away.
No, instead he came and talked to me. And
oh, he did?
Happy.
Great job, Karen.
And what is management's stance, Karen, about Ronnie being at the game? What do they tell you? When you see Ronnie, what are you instructed to do anything differently?
No.
Treat him as a regular customer. All right.
Somebody is texting us that he has been using a walker. Is that true?
He was in a full cast, a walking cast on his right leg Sunday night. So,
wow.
Yeah, he didn't look too good.
Oh, that's too bad.
Poor Woo.
But still healthy enough to woo-woo for the Cubs, right? He was still making the noise?
He was, but not as loud.
Oh,
not as loud, yeah.
Can we ask you something here, Karen? Your work security for the Chicago Cubs. How are the fans being? Are they
really
being
really nice?
They're being pretty well behaved, aren't they?
During the playoffs, much better than during the regular season.
Wow, I wonder
why. Because they're more nervous.
Well, you have a lot of people who have never been there before,
right? You also don't want to be thrown out when you think about how much it is per ticket. The last thing you want to do is say or do anything that might get you tossed, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. I mean, I had one person that was telling me he got a talking to by my boss, and he said, "Yeah, I decided to behave myself." He goes, "I paid $200 for this seat."
Yep.
It's a good
watch the whole game. I get
good
that.
Deduction there. All right. Well, Karen, someone has texted and said that Ronnie has been at the last two weekend games at Wrigley, walking with the assistance of a walker and an aide. I would assume a person.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
A handler.
Yeah, he wasn't alone, but I didn't see the walker. I think he was trying to get around Sunday night without it, but he had a full cast on, a walking cast.
Poor Wolf.
How can he afford these tickets? These are very
Somebody
expensive.
Gives it to
is
him.
That what it is? Yeah.
Yeah.
All right,
they
that makes
should.
Sense. Right, he's part of Kublor, you know.
Right.
All right. Well, Karen, thank you. We hope to have at least a couple more games at Wrigley, don't we? At least a few more. I hope to keep you employed for the next few weeks for sure.
Exactly.
All right.
Good luck, Karen.
Thanks, Karen.
Thank you.
Woo! Karen, woo! Security, woo!
Somebody says...
How did he think of that? Like, what? There must have been a moment in his life where he went, I'm not just going to attend games, I'm just going to say woo when I'm at games.
But everybody says woo.
But he doesn't stop saying woo.
I know, but that's what makes him special. We never thought to capitalize on the woos.
Right. Right.
Somebody says, this is the exact wording of this text. Bill,
yeah.
You need to tell Joe Buck to stop his nonsense on TV.
I like Joe Buck.
I don't like Joe Buck.
I'm the only one. I don't think his family likes him, but I like him.
I love Joe Buck, too, but he is a little pro-Dodger.
Well, he was pointing out last night he had this myriad of stats, all of them negative about the Cubs' offense or lack of offense, and he just rattled it off. It was one stat after another. And you do go, all right, we know they're not hitting. You don't have to prove it.
Don't
we
rub
know
it in.
It. Right.
Didn't he say, though, at one point, I know you're getting tired of
yes.
me saying this,
yes,
but
he
yeah, he did.
Yes.
All right, so you got Ronnie Woo Woo and Joe Poo Poo.
Right.
That's what we have to look
That's
forward to.
That's your broadcast
to.
Team. All right, a quick break and then more show. It's Bill and Ronnie at WGN. Are you following this story about a guy named Max Spears who died mysteriously in Poland? Do you know any of this? I know that you enjoy... a conspiracy theory every now and then.
I do like them.
Listen to this. A fellow conspiracy theorist, Max Spears, has been found dead in Poland just days after he texted his mom, instructing her to investigate should anything strange happen to him. Max Spears, 39-year-old father of two, was found dead on his couch in Poland, where he had gone to give a talk about conspiracy theories and UFOs. He was ruled to have been. He is ruled to have died from natural causes, despite no postmortem examination being carried out on his body, but his dark investigations into UFOs and government cover-ups may have made him enemies who wanted him dead, according to his mother, Vanessa Bates. She's 63. I don't know what bearing that has on the story, but they point out that she is 63. They do that in People magazine all the time. They'll tell you a story about somebody, and in brackets it goes 36, and you go, so? In a chilling text message to his mom just days before his death, Max Spears wrote, "Your boy is in trouble. If anything happens to me, investigate." Originally from Canterbury, Spears was a former classmate of Orlando Bloom. More information that doesn't matter, but it's
yes, it does. It's kind of interesting.
Do you think Orlando Bloom had a hand in this? I wonder.
Well, no, but he could have been a contender.
Orlando Bloom?
No, this guy.
Oh, this guy? He lived in the United States for a few years, but returned to the UK to stay with his mother before jetting off to Poland. Bates said he was making a name for himself in a world of conspiracy theorists who had been invited to speak at a conference in Poland in July, the Conspiracy Theorist Convention. He was staying with a woman who he had not known for long.
Oh, that's trouble.
But she told me how she found him dead on the couch.
Allegedly.
Allegedly. This, again, according to his mom. But I think Max had been digging in some very dark places, and I fear that somebody wanted him dead. Spears' pals have claimed that he vomited a black liquid when he died in a Warsaw apartment. That's eerie. Speaking to Project Camelot, a friend, Miles Johnson, said, "A person has died here, and I think it's good enough that somebody who just took normal medication should end up vomiting, but spewing black liquid." Well, whatever it was.
Is he an alien?
No. Doesn't say he's an alien. They would say that. But then, shortly after that, whatever length of time happened, he died. Max made a career out of investigating UFO sightings and alleged cover-ups. More recently, he was said to be probing into the lives of well-known figures in politics, business, and entertainment.
I thought aliens probe humans. He shouldn't be probing.
Normally, that's what happens normally. But this is kind of eerie, isn't it?
Yeah, but I feel like the woman that he didn't know very well
may have had.
Did they question her?
That,
did they ask the 63-year-old mom if they questioned her?
That doesn't really come up as often as I would want it to in the story, because that's that I would really
suspect.
Spend a lot more time with the woman who they go out. The mother goes out of the way to say they really didn't know each other for very long. That would be, if I'm drawing up a list of potential suspects, I might ask her another question or two before I tell her she's free to leave.
Agreed.
Right?
That is weird.
Yeah. All right. We'll take a quick break. The Wintrust business lunch is just moments away. We'll talk to Steve and find out what he has coming up for you. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
On 720 WGN.
Kim, thanks. Hi, everybody. It's Bill F. and it's Wendy Snyder. It's part two of our show. It's Wednesday. The weather's nice. You already know that. It's a good day.
It is a good day. A good day to figure out your Halloween costume.
Is that what you've been up to?
I know.
You got one picked out already?
Yeah. We have a little Halloween party going on here on Halloween, on Monday.
Yes.
And you're not going to dress up?
I'd be shocked if I did. It's possible, but...
Kevin, are you dressing up? You are.
Kevin's in.
He's going to wear his friend's Speedo.
Mm-hmm. He's done that in the past.
He can be the grown-up version of Captain Underpants.
Right.
I figured out my costume.
Do you want to share it or do you want to surprise us on Halloween?
I don't know what to do. I guess I'll surprise you on Halloween, but it doesn't involve... I have a prop
mm-hmm.
and two items of clothing, which I would probably wear anyway,
mm-hmm.
and an added bonus. That's all I have to do.
Is it easy to discern who you are? When people
Absolutely.
See you, will they know immediately who you are?
I can't wait.
All right. Well, you have to wait a couple more weeks.
I also bought your birthday present early, so
that
I can't wait to tell you that.
All right. That's still a few months away.
I have one quick Halloween question before we start our show for the second half of it anyway. Isn't this a year that people could reuse the Bartman costume?
No. Mm-mm.
Well, it'll be over with by Halloween. We'll know either way.
The Cub Nation, whoever Cub Nation is, has decided that it's time to stop blaming him and it's time to stop ripping him.
I 100% agree.
I was amazed. I was at that game, and I was amazed the anger that came while it was happening. You know, they had to, you know the story.
They had to
escort him out for his own safety. He was never seen again.
We were asked, it was funny because we were, while watching the Cubs game last night, my youngest son Dylan said, what happened to Bartman? Was he arrested? Was he taken out of the game? Was he kicked out of the park? And Jim and I both said, no, security came to get him to protect him.
Right.
And
right.
Dylan's like, what? I said, oh my God, everybody in that stadium, he would have gotten hurt.
I've already told you this, but the guys behind me, two very big guys, when this happened, they were swearing and cursing, and one of them goes, let's get him, and then they left their seats, and they did not return. I don't know where they ended up, but they walked over. They were going to rough him up, and they weren't the only ones in the stadium that had that mindset. That was 15 years ago, 15 years ago to the week, by the way.
And I was reading an article by his, he got like a family attorney or something to help him out.
Yeah.
I feel so sorry for him and heartbroken when I think about it, because all this was a guy going to the game by himself, avid Cubs fan,
right?
And 15 years, and people, including myself, are still bringing that
sure.
up.
Sure.
And he'll never go to another game again.
Now, depending on who you talk to, because I've heard people, for instance, a friend of our family, a very close friend, he's an attorney. And he called me that night and said, I know you were at the game. He said, do me a favor. Nobody knew who Steve Bartman was at that point.
He wasn't named?
He was not named. I mean, the game was happening, so it was just a fan with glasses and reaching up to catch a foul ball.
It looked like Richard Roper, honestly.
I still think it was Richard Roper.
I'm not kidding. In some kind of disguise.
Right. Right.
It really...
It looks a lot like Richard
lot.
Roper. Let's say, for the sake of argument, it was Richard Roper. So my friend calls me up and he says, hey, Bill, I know the family of the guy that was on TV tonight. He said, and I know his name and I'll tell you his name. He said, but do me a favor. Don't say his name on the radio tomorrow. I was doing a morning show at the time. He goes, don't say his name on the radio because his family, you know, will be in turmoil. And I said, don't worry. I won't say his name. But by tomorrow morning, everyone's going to know his name. And he goes, I don't know. He's just a guy in the crowd. Everybody knew his name by the morning. And how can you not feel sorry for this guy in the same exact situation with a fly ball coming at you
It's a, I know it's a playoff game, but you think to yourself, I'm about to catch a foul ball at a playoff game. This is very exciting.
And you don't think, if it's coming into the stands, you don't think anybody's going to be right. able to jump up and
right.
catch it.
It
and there were other people
catch.
That were reaching
there
even
were a
before
bunch of other
him.
People. There were a bunch of other people.
Oh, I see. And I think about it because I read this article in the Tribune. I can't find it right now, but it's like he didn't want to be hated. He just wanted
right.
to go to a damn Cubs game. And now he's like the most hated man in all of Cubs
well,
history.
I think finally now everyone's coming to their senses and realizing that there's false blame. You know,
he was the
scapegoat.
This wasn't
a premeditated.
No,
he didn't
God,
say,
no.
boy, if there's ever a situation where it's a I'm going to reach over and ruin the mojo of the team. That never happened. If you'll remember, our friend John Cass, Chicago Tribune columnist, was the first one on the scene to talk to him. He wanted to do a story about him immediately. And he, Steve Barton, has turned down
everything.
So much money for interviews. So many places have said, we've tried to get him to talk about this. He doesn't want to cash in on this. He feels awful.
They offered him six figures to appear in a Super Bowl commercial, and
he said no.
No.
To six figures.
He just wants his life back,
right.
and I feel I'm really heartbroken over this.
Yeah.
15 years ago.
I know. Isn't that hard to believe?
I just thought maybe this was the year to bring back the costume.
So many people have said that what the Cubs need to do at this point is to bring him out. You know, the Red Sox did this with Bill Buckner years ago. Bill Buckner was the scapegoat of the Red Sox because a ball went through his legs.
Because he Bucknered.
I guess so. Yeah. So the Red Sox realized we got to stop blaming Bill Buckner for this. And they brought him out and the crowd went nuts for him. They loved him again, even though there was a time where... Bill Buckner said himself, there was a time where he thought about killing himself. He was so
Can
despondent
you imagine? I mean,
over
yeah.
that.
I mean, we got to stop blaming other people for things that are beyond our control.
Right.
Let's By the way, the debate today. Is on tonight.
Yeah, don't miss the debate where nobody's blaming anybody. All right, we'll take a quick break, and then we have a big full show for you. It's part two of our Wednesday show, Bill and Wendy WGN.
Kevin Powell's doing a great job, may I add.
Yeah, he's in Los Angeles covering the playoffs. He's doing a great job.
Sitting by the pool, but also doing a very
right.
good job.
You can do both. Since we're talking about notable Chicagoans like Steve Bartman, please, everybody, forgive Steve Bartman if you haven't already.
And it was 13 years ago, not 15.
Oh, was
People
it 13?
People are correcting you.
For some reason, I thought it was 15, but it's 13. All right, good. I just gained 2 years of my life. I get to live two extra years. I ran into, during lunch... I walked over across the street. There's a guy upstairs, Eric, who I know if you don't work at WGN, you don't know, but we've had him on the show once. He was up for being America's Funniest Dad
and what
on the
number
Today
was
Show.
He
finished third, I think.
I think second.
Was
He's
he
the second?
Second
funniest man.
Second
dad.
Funniest dad
yeah,
in
not
America.
Man. Forget the man.
Yeah.
Dad.
Dad.
He is really funny.
Yeah. So because of that, he and I walked to lunch once in a while. We don't have lunch together. That'd be too funny. We just walk to lunch, and then we buy it and come back. All right, so we ran into somebody that you had discussed with me earlier today. It was like so out of the blue that I saw this guy.
God, I can't remember all the people I discussed
with
you.
We've mentioned
a
lot of different people today.
But we do that off the air. I don't know. Was it Maury Amsterdam?
No, it's not Maury Amsterdam. That would have been crazy because Maury died about 25 years ago. So that would have been awful. It was, remember earlier today, not
Pete McMurray?
On the air. It was not Pete McMurray.
Because we mentioned him. Like, why is he on the air here?
Former and future WGN great Pete McMurray. It was not him.
Hey, buddy!
It was, you said to me about 2 hours ago.
Hey, buddy.
Give me a clue.
It's got to be faster, Steve. The
hey,
key
buddy.
To doing it, it's, yeah, it's that fast.
It's kind of like hey, Anna Balaval, but
yeah.
with the hey, buddy.
Hey, buddy!
Like that. It's
yeah,
really
and
fast.
Higher.
Hey, buddy!
Like that.
Yeah, see, Pete's voice is higher than mine.
That's
so.
How you say it.
All right.
All right, so you said to me about two and a half hours ago, hey, whatever happened to the walking man?
Oh, my God.
I saw him today. He's the guy, if you've ever been in the city of Chicago, you have seen this guy. And he had boy, what a rough year it's been for him.
He got beat.
Yeah. Somebody
terribly.
Somebody just knocked him out, put him in the hospital. You know, he's a guy, how do you best describe this guy? You see him, if you walk around the city of Chicago, it's inevitable you will run into him with some regularity. He has a very European flair to him, both in his style of dress and in his haircut. He is gray now. For years and years and years, he had jet black hair and a big, like a Hall & Oates kind of mustache.
Yeah.
Right? Just Oates. Hall didn't have one, just Oates. An Oates mustache.
John Oates. Would
John
you
Oates.
Give him some credit?
Yeah.
Just Oates. Daryl Hall and
Oates. And you would... I saw him...
there were times where I'd see him every day. Like wherever I'd be in the city, he just would be walking by. Nobody knew much about him. Nobody knew his name. But he had a terrible thing happen a couple months ago where somebody, I think on Wacker,
Lower Wacker, right? A man hit him with a baseball bat.
Yeah.
And then he was identified because a GoFundMe page came out, and his nephew, I believe, came forth. And he didn't want any of the money. Linda Kromelis, a sister-in-law, and his nephew, Vitas Vaitkis, have tried getting in touch with him. They were unable to confirm that he was in the hospital, probably because of HIPAA laws. Yeah. Or maybe he said, I don't want my family to come see me.
Oh.
But he's walking again?
Yeah. He looked really good. He was walking with, you know, a little bit of flair again. I mean, he was...
Really?
But then as I approached, like I said, Eric and I are crossing the street and we see him. And I was going to say to him, hey, we were just talking about you. All I got out was this. I go, hey, are you doing better? And he looked very nervous because somebody all of a sudden was approaching.
Yeah.
And he just kind of held back a little bit. And he goes, yeah, doing fine. Things are better. Things are better. And then just kept on walking. But I mean, it's so funny because a couple hours ago you said, boy, I wonder what happened to him. I haven't seen him in a long time. And there he was.
All right. Well, I wonder who's going to win the lottery tonight.
Because
is that going to work that I'll win yeah, the lottery?
Yeah, say it that way.
Well, I tried to find some information, and there's really been no update since June, and they had raised about $33,000 on his GoFundMe page, but now they're saying that he didn't want to take the money.
Does it say why?
No.
Just doesn't want the money.
He just is in his own little world.
If you'll remember the story, and I don't remember what month it was that all this happened to him, but it didn't look like he was going to make it. He was beaten very, very severely down on Lower Wacker. But
they thought he might be blind. I mean, it was terrible.
He's made a nice recovery, thankfully. That's the good news there. But they've written, there was a song written about him. There's a documentary about him. He's like one of the most mysterious characters around Chicago. Because like when you describe him to somebody, they go, no, I don't know. Oh, wait, yeah, that guy. I've seen that guy a bunch of times.
He's a very private guy, a loner. He grew up in Lithuania and moved with his family to Chicago when he was about 5.
You know who he looks like? Remember Yanni? He kind of looks like Yanni, doesn't he?
Yeah. Yanni's not going to be happy to hear that, but at least we're bringing his name up.
I think they look similar, he and Yanni.
He moved to Chicago when he was about 5, attended high school here, according to his sister. His father, Jonas Kromelis, owned a tavern in Chicago, but in the middle to late 1960s, he and his wife, Gertruda, moved to Michigan because they liked the area better. Kromelis stayed in Chicago where he worked as a street vendor, and he would sell jewelry on the streets.
What country was he from originally?
Lithuania. I'm sorry, I didn't get his first name, and I want to give him some credit. Joseph.
Mm-hmm.
Joseph Kromelis. For about 30 years, Kromelis lived in an apartment near Lincoln Park, but about several years ago, this was written, I guess, today.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
I don't know. I don't know when the article was. I'm looking at the wrong header here. He lived in an apartment near Lincoln Park. And he had to move because the building was converted to condos. Oh. I remember hearing that story.
Yeah.
He never married, no children. His parents are dead, as are his 3 brothers and 1 of his 2 sisters.
It doesn't say what he does, because he's always, whenever you see him, he has the look of somebody who's
on a mission,
almost late for an appointment. I don't have time. I really need to go.
Yeah, he didn't want to take the money. I got to see when this was written. May of this year.
In a day and age where everybody's looking for something, some kind of a handout, this guy all of a sudden has people that want to help him, and he says, no, that's not the way I do things. Thanks, but no thanks.
I'm so glad you saw him.
Yeah, and it was so encouraging to see him looking healthy again. You know, because really, when these stories were written about this beating, you say to yourself, oh, that's terrible. Who would be so low as to hurt this man? But, yeah, he was walking pretty briskly. He looked healthy. Seemed to be in good shape again. That was very encouraging.
All right. I never really saw him before
I worked
with you. And you would say, see that guy right there out the window?
That's the walking guy.
And I'm like, I don't know that I've ever seen him.
It always makes me wonder, because I would say over the years I've seen him 500 times.
That many?
Yeah. Because he stands out. Just his style of dress, and because he has so much hair, he's so noticeable. So then you say to yourself, if I've seen that guy, if I've just happened to run into that guy 500 times over the years, are there other people that I just see every day and because they don't stand out as much, you just kind of file them away as, oh, it's just another person.
How many times have you seen me? You file
I've
me away.
I've seen you a dozen times over the years, close to a dozen.
I don't think I've seen you all day, Wednesday.
God, you ruined your own joke. How's lunch going up there?
I haven't seen you all Wednesday, Wendy.
Thank God it is Wednesday. Prince Spaghetti Day.
TJIW.
Oh, all right. Well, thanks for putting the bookend on that, Bertrand. We appreciate it.
No problemo.
I'm glad you saw him, though, because I really was curious about him earlier.
It's the craziest thing. His name has not been mentioned by you or me in months. You bring him up today. There he is.
Well, good. Was Eric with you when you ran into him?
Yeah.
Did Eric talk to him?
Eric, it was a new story.
Eric Niewaronski?
Yeah. Like, I tell him the story. I go, that's the guy. I tell him. He goes, I don't think I might have heard of that. I don't know.
But see, I worked in Chicago for 30 years, but sometimes it's been at night or off hours.
Yeah.
So I wasn't really here just...
During primetime hours.
Yeah,
right.
I really wasn't.
Right.
And you were getting in your car and driving off, probably.
Yeah, that's true. I wasn't just walking up and down the street. Right. So you've worked during the daytime a lot longer than I
had. Maybe that's probably
And
part
you
of
would
it.
See him more... Because honestly, when we worked at the other place, did he walk over there, too?
Yes.
He walks everywhere.
He's got a... Like, honestly, I can't figure out what his route is because he's all over the place, isn't he, Steve? I've seen him like near Second City, you know, in Old Town. Yeah,
Maybe he's Ubering now, the Uber man.
I wonder.
He's like the Marlboro man. Did you say that?
He does look similar. Yeah. Like Sam Elliott
and the Marlboro man,
the guy who goes Coors, the banquet beer. That guy.
I couldn't think of Sam Elliott's name, but he is like a combo. Sam Elliott meets the Marlboro man. Bill thinks a little Yanni's in there, too.
Yanni. You don't see that?
I mean, I can see it, but I think we've already defined it pretty well.
All right. We've gone too far. Our description
And we can throw
man.
In Doug Henning if you want.
Doug Henning a little bit.
Kenny G?
Some Kenny G. I mentioned Oates from Hall & Oates.
Well, it's good to know that he survived and he's up and at him again.
That's the good news.
You got to just pick up where you left off and keep walking.
Right. Belinda Carlisle, do you
Belinda
see any?
Carlisle, little Belinda Carlisle a little bit. Carla. Molly Ringwald to some extent.
The hair. Yeah, I think
Thank you, Saturday.
Dr. Hang S. Muir. Do you see that a little bit?
I don't know who that is.
Doesn't matter.
Come on, one person got that. Who is it?
I don't know.
The person who got it? We don't know.
I don't know. All right, we'll take a quick break. We've got news and then a lot more. Show Bill and Wendy WGN. All right, prepare to be infuriated. I am. Nothing in my life makes me angrier than people texting and driving. Nothing. It's the most selfish act you could possibly do. It's as dangerous can be. It's illegal, and yet a day doesn't go by that I don't see multitudes of people texting and driving at the same time, despite the fact they could kill somebody or themselves.
I have seen probably 5 people each day talking on a phone, which you're not supposed to do. And the very first day that law went in effect, I got pulled over and got a $150 ticket on Lakeshore Drive for talking on the phone. And I said, oh, I'm sorry. It was my kid's school call. I don't care who it was.
Right.
And I realized I was at fault. Every day I see people holding the phones up to themselves. I see them texting. Lower Wacker Drive, as I leave every day, cars are bumper to bumper. Honestly, I would say once every couple of weeks, somebody rear-ends the other person because you're only moving up an inch, but they're still on their phones.
Right.
Keep your foot on the brake.
Right. I've seen it in parking lots of grocery stores or my health club where...
Just pull over. You're in a parking lot.
You're already in a dangerous position with cars moving in and out, and yet people, as soon as they get in their car, they feel the need to text or make a phone call. It's as dangerous can be. It is illegal. I don't see, other than you being lucky enough to be pulled over, I don't see cops pulling anybody over
either.
For this. And it's so blatant. You can always tell. And there's studies that say that it's more dangerous to follow somebody who's texting than somebody who's drunk driving. What does that tell you? How dangerous could it possibly be if that's the case?
And I know people are going to say, well, I don't have an updated car, so I can't do it hands-free. You can do it hands-free, and you press a button. I have one car that doesn't have a system where it's all Bluetoothed.
Right.
So, wait till you shouldn't even do it at a stoplight, and I'll admit I'm guilty of that.
The problem with the stoplight is everything we just mentioned. It's still dangerous. The other thing is, you always see somebody in front texting or making a phone call, and then the light changes and they don't see it, so there's that extra 10, 15 seconds before they go. So the person who loses out is the person who's 8th or 9th or 10th in line.
I'm paying attention to the light. I can put lipstick on at a stoplight
and
go as the light changes. No one's ever honked for me to go.
I wish I could take a side job as a police officer just to pull over people who are texting and driving. I'd make the city, whatever the city's deficit is right now, I'd make it back in 6 weeks. I'd pull over that many people. So here's a story out of Minnesota. This is the reason I'm so furious. Listen to this. Try not to get angry when you hear this story. A driver who was texting when she hit and killed a 79-year-old man from the city of New Prague, Minnesota, will spend 4 days in jail after a judge ordered her sentence on Monday.
4 days?
4 days. She was texting and driving and killed a guy, and the judge said, what you did is wrong. 4 days to you.
Why just 4 days?
I'll get to that. I'll tell you the story. A LeSueur County judge sentenced 48-year-old Susan Ann Russo for the accident that happened nearly a year ago, October 28th, 2015. The victim, a man named Joe Tikalski, was a school bus driver who was walking out to his mailbox outside of his home when he was hit.
Oh, my God.
The Tikalski family, that's Joe's family, the guy who got killed, is choosing action over anger. Emma Jean Tikalski, his wife, married to Joe for over 54 years,
look at that,
said on Monday that this was the first time she and her children met with the driver who hit her husband, the driver, again, a 48-year-old woman, Susan Ann Russo. We cried together and they begged us, my daughter and myself, would you please find it in your heart to forgive us, Emma Jean Tikalski said. I knew that was a godlike thing and that I was being expected to do, and so we did it. We said yes. Her husband gets killed by a woman texting and driving. Their family comes and asks for forgiveness. They say yes.
Got to tell you, that's
a great
family.
Did they not like
family.
Him?
No.
Did the family not like this guy?
Anger and bitterness will ruin you for the rest of your life.
Could you? All right. Let's say this happened to you, that some girl, without a doubt, texting and driving, drives past your house. Jim is out getting the mail, or one of the boys is out getting the mail, and they're killed as a result of this woman texting. Would you be able to forgive them?
I can't answer that question because at first, no. I would hate them.
Yeah.
I would want them to be dead and not my loved one. But at some point, your bitterness and angerness and resentment is not going to bring your loved one back. And I don't know. I would feel for that person like they didn't mean to do it.
It won't bring them back. But don't you at some point need to make a statement? Because what's to stop this woman? I know she says, I'm going to stop.
She killed someone. She's never going to do this again.
All right. I know I've told you this story. When you and I were working at another radio station, I don't want to get into specifics, but there was there was somebody working there who hit somebody, hit a father and their son, and almost killed the kid. And I said to her, I've already said too much on who this person is, but
I don't know who it is, and I work
there. I said, this must have been the worst thing in the world for all parties involved, but if there's any good that comes of this, you'll never text and drive again. And she looked, her eyes got really big, and she goes, well, I go, well, what? She goes, I'll certainly be more careful.
Okay, that's one person.
That's
I'm
the
sorry.
Worst thing in the world.
If I killed someone, I don't think I'd even ever touch my phone again. That's got to be a terrible feeling. They're begging for forgiveness.
Right.
I think it is very admirable of the widow and the deceased's children to forgive this woman who did it.
I couldn't do it. There's no way I could forgive and forget like that.
Well, they're never going to forget. They will never forget.
I hope not.
But they, you know, at some point that angerness turns to, you know, it's not going to bring them back.
No, I know. But you just can't let somebody off with this is the ultimate slap on a wrist. 4 days, a guy's life is gone because she's careless enough to text and drive. You can't just go, oh, you know what? I get it. Accidents happen. This is just irresponsibility. It costs
totally.
The guy's life.
But everybody makes mistakes in their life, too.
The Tikalskis hope that other drivers will realize it takes only a split second to take a life and change the lives of so many people. 4 days or 400 days, it doesn't really matter, Emma Jean Tikalski said. That, again, the widow of the man who died in this accident.
She's kind of right.
I know she didn't mean to kill anybody. Joe Tikalski drove a New Prague school bus for almost 50 years. He was wearing his reflective jacket from work when he walked out to get the paper.
And it didn't help because she wasn't looking at the road.
She was
so
texting.
Reflective or not.
Right, right.
Poor guy.
It's even more scary knowing that we have the society that is, I'll say, addicted to their phone, Joe's son Greg said. That's true. That is
true. That's true.
It goes beyond addiction. His kids were his pride and his joy, and his grandkids were also his pride and his joy. The family is working with lawmakers to lobby for more strict and defined distracted driving laws. You know, you can make these laws all day long unless the police are enforce them, and they're not.
They're not at all.
They're just not. You got to do something more than make the laws. You got to enforce them.
To confirm your fact that so many people are texting and driving, hi, Judy, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you. I have to tell you that annually I collect for Misericordia on Fridays in the city where I used to live and on Saturdays out here in Palatine. And this past year, I have to tell you, I was just astounded at the number of people that, you know, it used to be if they looked down, you figured they were going for their wallet or checking their change thing, you know. But every time I would walk up to a car, they were texting or they were talking, you know, and it was just incredible to me. And it didn't matter what kind of car, it didn't matter the sex, age, or ethnicity of the occupants, because West Rogers Park is very diverse, okay? Eight or nine out of 10 people were on their cell phones or texting. It just blew my mind.
Isn't that terrible?
I couldn't get over it. Yeah.
Judy, I would be afraid being in the intersections with people like that because you're going to get hit.
Well, you know, we try to sidestep that. But,
well,
but really, it was just a huge eye-opener for me. And I'm a person that, you know, I am not attached to my cell phone. My daughter says I'm the worst cell phone person in the world because 9 times out of 10, I don't even think to take it. When I'm at home, you can't hear it because it's a bigger place. So I tell people, call me at home before you try my cell, because at least leave me a message, because I might not have my cell with me or I might not hear it. It's just everyone has this umbilical thing with their phone now. And I think they're missing out on a lot of stuff. And the case in point that you brought up is the really scary thing. It really is.
You can kill someone.
Yeah.
I like to think the kids today are more observant of this because they've had cell phones since before they drove. We have them now after we've been driving for many years. And I think kids are more careful than adults. I think adults are the worst culprits.
My daughters have told me for years, because I was always nervous about them being in the car with one of their friends that was texting and driving. And they said, by far, it's their friend's parents.
Yep.
If they're driving them somewhere, they would be the ones texting and driving. The kids are...
They know better now. Yeah. Well, thank you for that startling statistic, Judy, and good work with Misericordia.
All righty. Thank you. I hope everybody supports Misericordia.
Thanks, Judy.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Us too.
Shall we take more? We have to take a break.
Yeah, there's a bunch more calls. We would love to hear from you. It's the story of a woman in Minnesota who killed a guy. She was texting and driving. Her family asked for forgiveness. They got the forgiveness. She only served a 4-day sentence. Your thoughts on this? 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. It's Bill and it's Wendy. Let me quickly catch you up if you're just tuning in. We're telling you the story about a woman, 48 years old, Susan Ann Russo. She lives in LeSueur County in Minnesota. The town is called New Prague. About a year ago, she is texting and driving. And while texting and driving, she hits and then kills a 79-year-old man who's walking out just to get the mail in front of his house, 79-year-old New Prague man. This woman, Susan Ann Russo, found guilty of killing him, will serve a 4-day sentence in jail, 4 days, because the families talked after this man had died, Joe Tucholsky, and they decided that it'd be best served to not put her in jail for a long time. It was an accident, but to spread the word of how dangerous this could be. You and I are slightly at odds. You say it'll destroy you to worry about it and think about it forever and not let it go. But
I can't imagine it wouldn't. If you killed someone, I can't imagine that hanging over your head every day.
But a 4-day sentence, that to me is as criminal as the act itself. To just say to a woman after 4 days, you took a human life, go spend go spend 96 hours in jail and get on with your life. That's not enough.
My question is, the forgiving family that said, I believe the widow's quote was 4 days, 40 days, what's the difference?
4 days or 400 days.
Okay.
Yeah.
But aren't there laws? I mean, why does the widow get to dictate how long the person stays in jail?
Well, the family can certainly ask for leniency, and it is illegal. I'll read you this part. I didn't tell you this part before. And this is a common misconception. I've heard so many people say, I'm at a stoplight. I'm not driving. I'm in a car, but I'm in a stoplight. I could look at texts all day long if I want to. Wrong. It is legal right now. Listen to this. It is legal right now to send. Oh, I'm sorry. It is illegal right now to read or send text while driving, even when you're stopped at a light. Now, the widow said this, we care about people living and something must be done, she said. Russo will spend 2 days in jail on the anniversary of Joe Tucholsky's death this year, and then another 2 days next year on the anniversary
well,
of his
see,
death.
Well, see, that's teaching her a lesson more than 400 days in jail, Bill.
2 days a year?
2 days to reflect what she's done on his birthday?
On the anniversary of his death. Right.
And, you know, who are you to judge if the family feels, you know, nothing that they say or do is going to bring back my husband? So you live, you move
on. There's no way to bring him back. I understand that. But I'm telling you, there have been other cases where people have been given extremely lean sentences and then all of a sudden they're out doing the exact same thing again.
Well, then they're gone.
I don't think this woman's learning a lesson by spending 2 days a year in jail for the next 2 years.
But you don't know her. So maybe she's already learned her lesson. Like I said, maybe she tossed her phone out and will never touch it again. She killed someone.
She also has to pay a $3,000 fine. The family says they will use that money to raise awareness against distracted driving.
Well, more power to the widow for forgiving. It would be very hard for me to do it, but
you would do it.
I don't know, and I don't know when. You know, like it seemed soon thereafter.
A year.
I don't know if I'd be ready to forgive in a year.
Yeah.
But everyone heals differently. Alan?
Yeah, I've been listening to your story in a situation just yesterday on 88, just driving down the road, and here comes this kid flying up alongside me. I'm in the middle lane, and he checks up, slows down, and the car in front of him brakes. He swerved so hard, didn't know what to do, almost rolled it, and I would have been first on the scene about a mile down the road, right back on his phone. And
after that scare, he was right back on his phone.
He was right back on his phone. Didn't make a difference. Still speeding away on his phone. It won't make a difference. They're going to keep texting till they kill somebody.
Well,
isn't that sad? Isn't that awful?
It is sad. Trust me. And just like you guys, I drive for a living. I see it every day. People on their phones texting. Nothing's going to stop them until that accident happens. And then, as you said, I'm sorry. Sorry's too late. You're supposed to be intelligent enough not to do it now. That's why you're an adult. If you can't handle it, put the phone away. Put it in your purse. Is it, as AT&T says, is it that important? No, it's not.
Alan, thank you for calling. I heard some statistics yesterday, Bill, that just this year, the percentage of teenage drivers is up just a tick, but it's been down for the last several years. My son's one of them. He's 17. He's in no hurry to drive. And I sometimes feel that these are the things that scare them.
I'm sure of it.
Because
positive.
I'm explaining to him, even changing a radio station, you take your eyes away from the road for a second, especially if you're on the expressway.
Yeah.
It could be life or death.
I can spot somebody texting and driving from yards and yards away. I can't tell you how many times I've been like on Lakeshore Drive, and you see somebody just kind of in the middle of two lanes, and you go, there's no way in the world anybody who's driven before knows that that's not okay. You can't do that. So then as you catch up to them, you see, oh, it's because they're texting while they're driving on Lakeshore Drive.
I know.
Everyone's doing 45 miles an hour. Feel free to text and drive while you're on there.
It's really scary, and seriously, I may have thought of this too and scared Michael a little bit, but you know, I said, when you're driving, you kind of rely on everyone else to stay in their lane,
right,
and not hit into you. And he goes, well, how do you know they're, I said, you don't.
Not anymore.
You got to be a defensive driver.
Right.
You know, don't want to freak you out, but you got to pay attention to everybody else.
Yeah. We taught our kids when the girls were learning to drive, assume that they're going to do something outrageous. Just be ready for it at any time. It's so nerve-wracking to see.
It's really scary.
Yeah. All right, we'll take a quick break. We've got news next. Steve has the news, and then more show coming your way. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Thank you, Steve. It's Bill and it's Wendy here on WGN. You can reach us at any point during the show at 312-981-7200. That's both the text line and the call line.
It's debatable.
Oh, it's funny you say that. Tonight, Wendy, did you see this? They're going to do another one of these debates. They've been very popular with the kids. You put a Republican up against a Democrat, and then you just yell at each other for a while. It's fun.
You know, when we had Dr. Duffy in earlier, I said, is there an age limit? You know, like movies are, you know, PG, whatever, and yeah. Then TV, it's TMLA and MLOP. The debate...
NC-17.
Well, that's true, and he was encouraging, you know, younger kids to watch and maybe pause it and say, what do you think about that? And they did a survey surrounding that.
Yeah.
But the subject matter is too much for like an 8-year-old.
Kind of
adult.
Yeah, sure. Right.
Wow, what's happened to this country?
Changed a lot. There's a surprise guest coming to the debate, or he's been invited anyway. Do we know for sure if he's going to be there? Did you hear who Donald Trump is inviting to the debate tonight?
I did, but for the listeners who haven't heard it, why don't you break the news?
On the same day that President Barack Obama called on him to not whine so much about losing, the Republican nominee, spoiler alert, Donald Trump, to succeed him in the White House, responded by inviting Barack Obama's half-brother, Malik Obama, to attend Wednesday's third and final presidential debate in Las Vegas, Nevada.
I believe he has a couple of half-brothers, and one he gets along with, and this one he doesn't.
He does not get along with Malik.
Was this the one who was homeless, living somewhere?
Yeah. And
they have the same one of the same parents, but not both.
The same
mother?
Dad, I think. Right? It must be. I look very forward to meeting and being with Malik, Trump told New York Post's Page Six, which apparently landed the world exclusive of the story.
Is he a citizen, by the way, Malik?
I
don't think he is.
I don't think he is. Does it say? I don't think he is. He gets it far better than his brother, said Donald Trump of Malik Obama. Barack Obama.
Can I just say, good job, Donald Trump? I'm sorry. This is funny to me.
One brother became the first African-American president of the United States, but Donald Trump says, no, it's his brother Malik who gets it far better than his brother. How hard would it be for your brother to be the president? Like, what would you have to do to achieve that level of success?
You became president after him.
Right. Barack Obama is not on the Democratic ticket in November.
No?
The story points out.
Too bad.
To all of us who kind of already suspected that. But somehow Trump thinks it's a great strategy to use his half-brother as a prop against his actual rival, Hillary Clinton. Her campaign's press secretary responded to Trump's play on Twitter. The former reality star, was he on a reality show? I don't remember that at all. Was he? He must have been.
Trump.
Oh, that, okay, Trump
Good
was.
Good God, Bill.
I thought they meant Malik Obama. I'm like, what show was he on? Was he on Dancing with the Stars?
Not yet.
He will be. What's the one with the house where they put all the celebrities in the house until they tear each other's heads off?
Big Brother?
Surreal Life.
Surreal Life.
They
put
still
that.
Do that?
I don't think they do anymore, but they should bring it back.
Special edition.
Was Malik on a reality show?
I thought they meant Malik was
God.
On. Was he on Pretty Little Liar? Is that a reality show?
I don't
think it is. The former reality star, Donald Trump, for people who weren't sure, pulled a similar stunt right before the second debate earlier this month when he sought to distract from his on-the-record predilection of groping women by hosting a press conference with three women who have accused former President Bill Clinton. We already know this. None of this has anything to do with actual policy positions. That's the thing, is what's going to be said tonight where Donald Trump says to Hillary Clinton, when they're in the heat of argument, when they're in the heat of battle, what could possibly be said that Donald Trump will go, oh, yeah, well, guess who I've got? Say hello to Mr. Malik Obama, ladies and gentlemen. What's that going to do?
Right, because Malik can't come up. You can't call up a surprise guest to speak unless, of course, he does what he did with those women who are
the accusers.
I think actually in this debate you can use a lifeline.
Are you allowed one lifeline,
right,
Steve?
So I think maybe he'll use Malik as a lifeline.
Okay, but before the last debate, the women that were accusing Bill Clinton of issues, he did a Facebook Live before the debate. So he was doing that before he got on television, but right. If you're Facebook friends with him, which I'm not, he didn't accept me.
Oh, he didn't?
No.
That's interesting.
And by the way, can I just say, and you may have this in your story, but I find this to be important.
Sure.
Malik Obama was born in Kenya and is an American citizen.
Oh, he is.
He
didn't know that.
He voiced his support for Trump in July, saying he hoped to meet the Republican nominee. Trump's feelings are mutual. And Malik Obama called now-deceased Libyan dictator Muammar Gaddafi one of his best friends.
Oh, great. That's nice.
Mm-hmm. Just wanted to throw that in. Malik shares the same father with the president, different mother.
That's what I thought.
Yeah.
Yeah, because the last name's the same. So it would have to be
oh,
the father,
yeah,
right?
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not good at problems like that.
In my head, all I'm thinking about is which reality show we get Malik Obama on, because I think that's a ratings bonanza, right? Is this going to sway? How in the world would this sway a single person? I know you go, well, it's obvious. It's the president's own brother going against the Democratic Party, half-brother.
That he doesn't even have a relationship
right.
with. So
right.
It does look bad. It's like I got his brother, you know?
His half-brother.
Well, why would it look bad? I mean,
throwing support, like not supporting the party that your brother
is. I know,
is.
But to say it, you have to say, and right now I have the president's...
Malik Obama, the half-brother of Barack Obama. And he's not a fan of yours, Mrs. Clinton.
Right.
But couldn't she also dig up...
Well, she has
people.
Which is bad. I think she should have stayed out of this game. She's had invited Mark Cuban to be there.
And Meg Whitman, the Hewlett-Packard CEO and former Republican California gubernatorial candidate.
Okay,
so she's got a Republican on her side.
I guess that's why. But, you know, Cuban apparently gets under Trump's skin.
Right.
So he's there to antagonize, which I just think...
It's low.
It's just... It should be below what they do.
It's
or
the
they should
thrilla
be above
in Manila
that, yeah.
via Las Vegas. I mean, that's what this is.
Right.
This I cannot wait to see it. I'm sorry.
It's a grudge match.
I really can't wait. There is going to be so much stuff slung tonight.
Aren't you embarrassed by it all by now, Wendy?
I am embarrassed, but I can't stop the train a rolling. So now I want to be aware of what I should be more embarrassed about.
I absolutely love presidential politics. I love it. And
I typically don't.
I was when we were gone, and I'm reading from overseas about the women and the accusations. Like, oh, just enough.
That it's become this.
That it's become this, that, is, you know, I is, love the fight over issues or whatever, but...
Is anybody predicting, is there a single person
yes,
in the media
there
out
is.
Who's
there,
saying that tonight's is. Debate will be issue-oriented?
Oh, no.
It won't be a low blow. It'll just be the facts. That nobody's guessing that,
the
right?
only thing that is going to change my mind is if Donald Trump has President Obama's half-brother there.
Malik Obama.
He's
that's
there?
The game changer. He'll be there.
Who is that? The whole thing is a circus. It really is an embarrassment. But it's there, and we can't stop it, so damn right I'm going to watch
right.
it.
Right, right.
There'll be more hits than the Cubs game.
Oh, that's sad but true.
There will be. All right, let's... Oh God, how sad. How frightening. All right, we'll take a quick break, and then we have a bit more show for you. Stay where you are. If you want to jump in, we'd love to hear from you. We're 312-981-7200. What are you expecting in tonight's debate? What are you looking forward to? What are you dreading? We're here for you. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. All right, see if you notice a pattern. It's very subtle, but see if you notice a pattern. We're talking about tonight's debate. Donald Trump has decided that the best way to rile Hillary Clinton at this debate is to invite Malik Obama, that's Barack Obama's half-brother from Kenya. All right, here's see if you can find the pattern in this. Malik Obama, Billy Carter, Roger Clinton.
Are they going to be there too?
It seems. Billy's no longer with us.
Oh, that's right.
And I don't know.
Sorry.
I don't know where Roger Clinton ended up.
In jail.
But it seems
allegedly,
like our presidents
said.
Tend to have.
There's always a black sheep of the
goofy
family.
Brothers.
I am the proud black sheep of my family.
Now, in Jeb Bush's case, somehow there was role
Cousin.
Reversal. No, he's George's brother, Jeb Bush. But in that case. The goofy brother was the president, not the president's brother.
Yeah, but the goofy cousin trumps the goofy president, Billy Bush.
No. I'm saying in the Bush family, you had Jeb Bush.
Right.
Not Billy. Cute Billy out of
all
it.
All right.
Jeb was the one that the family thought, well, Jeb will be the president someday.
Oh, I
but
see
it
what
was
you're
George
saying.
Who
okay.
somehow got in.
Who thought Roger Clinton was going to be president?
No one thought he was going to be president.
Okay.
no one.
There's another guest that I would imagine would bother Hillary And Chris, you know Donald Trump's other guest he's invited for tonight's debate?
Yeah, do you know who it is?
Yes, I do. Why don't you say it, though? See what we do? We let you be the star.
Oh, I'm impressed.
Who is
her
it?
Her name is Pat Smith, and her son was killed in Benghazi.
Yeah, so she will be sitting front row as well to mess with Hillary.
So at some point, correct. Donald Trump...
Are you gonna make fun of her, too? Or...
No.
Why would I make fun of her, Chris?
I don't know. You're kind of being sarcastic about Malik Obama. So
you don't think that's a stretch, Chris? Be honest. You don't think inviting Barack Obama's half-brother is a stretch?
Yeah, I'll agree with you on that one, but you guys didn't talk about Pat Smith. I just kind of wanted to hear your insight on that one.
No, that's the one I said I think could kind of mess Hillary up.
Yeah, I definitely agree.
Yeah, not making fun of anyone. The whole Benghazi thing is
well, I'll
not
say,
funny.
I don't think she should be there either. I don't think the candidates on either side should be inviting guests to sit in the front row to try to rattle the other candidate. I think
I'm with you.
It should be below them. I don't care how noble the guest is.
Yeah, I agree, but I think if I'm not mistaken, it was Hillary Clinton who made the first move and brought in Mark Cuban.
No, that was Cuban chattering about that. I don't think that was ever going to happen. For the first one?
He didn't show up for the first one?
He kept saying he was invited or something. I don't know if he actually was.
I don't remember seeing him.
Well, whatever. I'm just referring to this debate. Now it's Mark Cuban and Meg Whitman. It's just kind of like they're like pawns trying to put him out there.
That's exactly what it is.
It's not it is exactly it.
And does that affect the voter? Now, coming in on the voter end of things, Chris, does it affect the voter or is it there just to mess up the candidate? Because they've come this far. I don't think either one is going to be frazzled by who's in the front row.
I agree. So if it is to intimidate voters or to, you know, I think Pat Smith, frankly, I think if the truth comes out as far as if she did, in fact, lie to her about why the whole Benghazi thing came about, which she claims was a video. I think it's a flat out lie. If that's what she told Pat Smith. A big lie.
I have nothing to say about that because I don't know.
It just seems
How could you not know? I mean, you don't know what was said to Pat Smith at the funeral for her son.
Tell me exactly.
Hillary Clinton got in front of the whole world and said what had happened was all due to a video.
And there was no apology? There was no...
No, the whole thing came about because of a video. And in reality, it was the false narrative that the Obama administration put out that, you know, Libya was calm and, you know, no problems, no need to look this way, look the other way. And then all of a sudden, you know, Benghazi blows up in their face and they got to try to make it look like it wasn't due to, the war going on there, and they blame it on a video.
So, Chris, obviously, Pat Smith's presence there means Donald Trump will tell that story and then allude to the fact that she's there in the audience. But what on either side, what does that do? What did these people being there, whose minds do they change just because they attend this debate tonight? Does that change anyone's mind?
I think it may change people's minds who you guys don't apparently even seem to know about it either, about the video. And if it's
I didn't know she was going to be there tonight. I didn't know Malik Obama was going to be there until 25 minutes ago.
Neither did I, actually. But my point was that since she's going to be there, that's going to maybe bring it to the surface more than if she wasn't there.
All right. Well, that's fair. That's what tonight's
issues.
Debate is.
I agree. Absolutely. Issues. I hope, you know, all the other baloney, I hope it's ignored and they really focus on the issues.
Let's hope. We'll know in a few hours.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Chris.
See you later.
Oh, no, this is crazy. I'm hearing now that Kenneth Bone's brother, Malik Bone, is going to be there, Wendy.
Malik Bone
is going to be there. Did you expect that? I didn't.
No, I did not. Do we have to take a break or do we have time for one more? I've completely lost track of time. One more call?
Yeah, you can do another.
All right, let's take Tom. Hi, Tom.
Hi, how are you? I just want to try to keep it short, but I find this whole thing embarrassing. They're wasting time and money, and we really need a
viable third party. And when Ross Perot warned us of NAFTA and all the crazy giveaways, that we were going to have a weird sucking sound of all our jobs and manufacturing, everyone called them crazy. And the Democrats, they go to not a lower strata, but the have-nots, and the Republicans, they just want to go for the people that try to get away with having all the money and not paying any taxes. We pay for all that on both ends.
Tom, really quick, because we're almost out of time, you mentioned a viable third party. In your opinion, is there a viable third party right now?
Not right now, no. But that goes back to campaign reform with the financing, because ever since they did read, they make it sound warm and fuzzy, Citizens United. All that is hello, people, wake up. It's just a corporation buying candidates, period.
Yeah.
And as far as Benghazi, I volunteered. A lot of my family had combat experience. That was empty. That whole area was empty. It was, and they there was a big mistake even going back in there. Number one, they never should have went back in there. That was a big mistake.
All right. Well, we thank you for calling, Tom. Have fun watching the debate, if that's what you call it.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And I went to factcheck.org, and the
Malik Bone will not be there. Is that what they're saying?
No, that's on Snopes.
Okay, good.
Factcheck.org. Did President Obama and administration officials mislead the public when they initially claimed that the deadly September 11 attack on the U.S. consulate in Benghazi began, quote, spontaneously in response to an anti-Muslim video? The question surfaced again in October, more than 6 weeks after the incident, when government emails showed the White House and the State Department were told, even as the attack was going on, that a little-known militant group had claimed credit for it. We cannot say whether the administration was intentionally misleading the public. We cannot prove intent. There is also more information to come, both from the FBI as they continue to investigate.
It's been debated ever since.
So that's the video,
yeah.
Which I didn't know exactly about.
Let's do this. We have to do this. We have to take a quick break. Rowan Ann will be in just a little bit. We'll find out what they have coming up. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Thank you, Steve. It's Bill. It's Wendy. And joining us in the studio is Chicago Tribune architectural expert, columnist. He's Blair Kamen. Hi, Blair. How are you?
Hey, Wendy. Great to be here.
Nice to see you again.
Under these circumstances.
Yes.
It's good to see you, except these circumstances are not good.
I know.
You are feeling the same pain that I'm feeling. Wendy is not a Cubs fan, but even she is feeling a little bit of the pain right now.
I am. You guys need to win this. I don't want you to continue to be one of those teams that wins years and years and years in a row. But you know what? It's time. We had it in 2005. It's your turn. But something better happened tonight.
Thanks, Wendy. That's very empathetic of you.
I do mean that from the bottom of my heart. I'm not a Cubs fan, but this team deserves it. Although the last couple of games, I don't know what to tell you.
I know. It's been tough.
It's so hard to win when you're scoring zero runs. You can win every once in a while with one run or two, but if you look traditionally through baseball, the teams that score zero runs almost never win.
That is very incredibly insightful of you, Bill.
Thank you very much.
I mean, that's what he does.
I'm sitting in for Pete Rose tonight after the game.
Yeah, right.
You've written an article about, and I'm not saying this for any other reason than I mean this, the majesty of the two stadiums involved.
Yeah.
Are really very different, aren't they?
They are. Wrigley Field and Dodger Stadium are like the yin and yang of baseball stadiums. You've got Wrigley, the cozy ballpark, you know, set right into a very dense urban neighborhood. And then you've got Dodger Stadium, the kind of prototypical colossal stadium built for the automotive age, you know, carved into a hillside about a mile from downtown Los Angeles. So they are really diametrically opposed. And yet, they have something in common, which is age.
Yeah.
They're the second and third oldest ballparks in the majors.
Fenway the oldest.
Fenway the oldest. And quality, enduring quality. They are both beautiful works of sports architecture.
And I'll add this to it. In both cases, ownership, team ownership, is doing whatever they can to update the facilities to make them even better.
Yeah, exactly right. I just got an email this morning from a Dodger fan who was bemoaning the previous ownership, which had let Dodger Stadium kind of fall apart.
Yeah.
And they're thrilled that the team has brought in you know, very good architects and architectural consultants. Janet Marie Smith is actually their architectural consultant. She was the one who worked with the Baltimore Orioles on Oriole Park at Camden Yards, yeah, the revolutionary retro ballpark. So they've got top talent out there, absolutely. Off the field as well as on.
Oh, yeah. Got to admit, yeah. Let's start with Wrigley, really one of the most charming sports stadiums anywhere. A couple years ago when there was all the talk about the Cubs leaving that area and going somewhere else, I kept saying, I wasn't the only one thinking, oh, please don't. It
would have been a shame.
It would have been a shame.
Sure. Absolutely. I mean, I think that it's great that the Cubs stayed. It's great that they have followed essentially the Fenway Park template for trying to take an ancient ballpark and bring it into the modern age. I am not a huge fan of the noise emanating from the signs.
Yeah.
It sort of disrupts what was once a kind of quiet pastoral atmosphere. But I think, you know, as in terms of the way the signs look and the information they give to fans, they work pretty well. So they've done a good job and they're still in the middle of it.
Right.
I mean, you know, it's another like 3 or 4 years till they finish.
Yeah.
Wrigley is really, a treasure, and obviously it has an incredible intimacy to it and a real sense of history. And Dodger Stadium though has its own sense of history, but it's just more recent history and it's, you know, LA kind of history. So it's the history of, you know, the drive-in culture history, which is very different from Wrigley, you know, right next to the L and right in the middle of a very dense city.
And I think a lot of us listening have been to Wrigley. I've never been to Dodger Stadium. It's like on the other side of a hill in a little ravine. Not such a little ravine, actually.
Well, right. It was carved into this area, this hillside near downtown Los Angeles, called Chavez Ravine.
Named for J.C. Chavez of NSYNC. Did you know that?
I did not.
Named for him.
Right. And it was really built for the auto age. What's fascinating about this ballpark is really the parking lot around it.
Yeah.
So L.A., right?
Yeah.
It's a tiered parking lot, a series of terraces that let people drive up to the ballpark and enter their seating section right at the same level as that seating section, at grade, in other words. So you would just, you know, get out, walk right in, you know, and go right into your seats. You didn't have to go up ramps.
Didn't have to go to a different gate from where you parked.
Right. Exactly.
Oh, my God.
And it's like a shopping mall. It's, you know, so L.A.
They have to do that because a lot of the fans have photo shoots immediately after the game, so they have to be able to get out of there very quickly.
Well, I mean, I thought it was interesting last night that the attendance there, it's a 56,000-seat ballpark. Right. They didn't fill up the stadium.
No, they didn't.
They didn't fill it up last night.
No, they didn't.
If it were Chicago, you know, you would never see that.
And the crowd arrives. I mean, this has always been a joke about Los Angeles, but the crowd arrives fashionably late. Whenever they would show crowd shots in the first inning and into the early second inning, there were empty seats everywhere.
Absolutely.
Filled up, and then they leave early.
Right, although Larry King was there.
How could you not notice him?
But what's interesting is that LA is changing. It's becoming more dense, less sprawling, and somewhat more dependent on mass transit. So, for example, the Dodgers now have a dedicated bus lane on which a bus travels from downtown Union Station in LA to the ballpark. And like about 3,000 or 4,000 people use it at night. So, you know, there are, even there, the kind of age of transit and Uber, even they have a dedicated Uber lot where you can get picked up after games. So, you know,
it's handy.
All the habits that are, the archetype of the park, the original archetype is very much auto age, but LA is changing in many ways. And that's reflected in the way it works today.
All right. Does the stadium matter in who's going to win tonight?
Absolutely. It always matters. I mean, think of Wrigley Field with the wins, right?
Yeah.
I mean, they play a huge role in determining whether it's a hitter's park or a pitcher's park. To some extent, even in L.A., the stadium shapes the action. It's much more spacious than Wrigley. So it's traditionally been known as a pitcher's park, although as we saw, unfortunately, last night, you can't hit home runs there. But it, you know, the Dodgers have molded their team traditionally around pitching, and that's because they you know, live and die by the setting of a pitcher's park. That's
you don't
what they're in.
Realize how spacious the outfield is from the regular camera shots, but every once in a while they'll show you an overhead shot,
oh, yeah.
And you say to yourself, boy, is that a large outfield.
Oh, there are balls hit to the outfield where they'd be home runs in Wrigley.
Yeah.
Like in the power alleys. They were saying that last night. You know, that would have been out, but not in Dodger Stadium. It's just this vast, you know, expanse of grass out there.
Wasn't there a time where it was referred to, I seem to remember as a kid, where they called the stadium Chavez Ravine?
People still call it that. In other words, the name of the neighborhood is still synonymous with the stadium.
Yeah.
The formal name, though, is Dodger Stadium.
Yeah.
And they moved mountains to make this happen?
They literally filled in ravines. They cut off the top of a mountain. And then, of course, there's a story of, you know, the Mexican-American neighborhood that was there in Chavez Ravine. It's complicated, but essentially there was supposed to be a federally funded public housing project that was built there. So many of the families were moved out in the early 1950s. Some remained. But then when the Dodgers cut the deal to go to Chavez Ravine, you know, many families were evicted from their homes. So, you know, again, as there's a kind of, although it kind of has this almost Disneyland type innocence to it, there's a kind of, you know, dark underside to the story of this ballpark.
And people are still upset about some of the things. And I say we blame that on Clayton Kershaw. And we say, you got a problem with that. You take it up with Clayton Kershaw. Take him out.
Yeah. you know, it's interesting, though, that, you know, Wrigley is still very much a neighborhood ballpark.
Sure.
It is literally right in the middle of a neighborhood. Even Fenway Park is not truly a neighborhood ballpark. It backs up to the Massachusetts Turnpike. And I got some emails today from people in LA saying, well, you know, there are some neighborhoods near Dodger Stadium, like Echo Park.
Yeah.
But another.
And you can't just walk across the street and get to the game, though.
Well, they were saying, yeah, we can walk there. But in other words, I mean, it's not the same. It's
no.
From an LA vantage point, that's close. But from a Chicago vantage point, you know, the stadium is still more like a shopping mall than a neighborhood ballpark like Wrigley.
Last week when the Cubs were playing the Giants, happier times in brackets.
Yeah.
They showed all these shots. And I'm watching with my wife and my daughters, and they don't watch a lot of baseball. So they're showing these shots of these guys in boats in McCovey Cove behind Giants Park.
Right.
And my wife said, what's that all about? And I go, people sit out there in a boat, and they hope a ball comes over, and then they keep the ball. And she goes, they sit there for 3 hours in a boat hoping a ball will come over?
Yeah.
How often does that happen?
Just like the Ballhawks on Sheffield.
It's their version.
But what's the difference of sitting in the stands for 3 hours or sitting on a boat?
You can't see the game. Oh. You cannot see the game at all.
I guess that would be stupid.
You know, I think what Wrigley has become a model in so many ways for the new generation of ballparks. It's quirky. It has personality. It is very much interacting with its setting. And that you really see that in a place like AT&T Park in San Francisco, where the famous, you know, McCovey Cove has become this kind of famous place.
Yeah.
I think that what's interesting is that as all these downtown parks have been built in places like San Diego, Baltimore, Denver, and others, Dodger Stadium has become kind of an outlier.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, it is, even though it's close to downtown LA, it might as well be like 20 miles away. And it's built according to this old suburban prototype of the kind of concrete donut stadiums, the awful multi-purpose stadiums that went up in the 60s. It's much better than they are.
Yeah.
But it's kind of this very rare and now revered outlier for a mid 19th-20th century model of what a stadium should, how it should fit into the city, and also how it should be designed.
Sure.
One thing I noticed last night, and Cubs fans can notice this tonight, was that the at the top of Dodger Stadium, there's a beautiful thin concrete canopy. You'll see it in the kind of shots that are cutting across from third base or from first base, and it's lit on the underside.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea is that it's thin, it's light. It's meant to kind of, the lighting is meant to like approximate the way that the sun hits the underside of the canopy in the morning or afternoon.
Oh.
So it's a really lovely detail. I didn't note it in my piece, but I noticed it last night and I put it up on my Twitter feed today. It's really, you know, God is in the details, as they say,
nice
right?
Yeah, nice little touch.
And so if the Cubs don't do well tonight, you can at least
Don't say that. Blair Kamen is here.
Hopefully that won't happen.
Oh, I hope not. Blair Kamen is here, writer for the Chicago Tribune, architectural genius. There, I said it. We'll be back with more in a moment. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Blair Kamen is our guest. He writes about architecture for your Chicago Tribune. Read him whenever you get a chance. What lesson, Blair, do you think the Cubs, the owners, the Ricketts family learned from what went on at Soldier Field with the Bears? When they decided they were going to upgrade the stadium and make it a little more modern, what did they learn from what went on over at Soldier Field?
Honestly, I don't think the Ricketts looked at Soldier Field. I think that really they looked at
No one likes to look at it. It's like a bedpan landed from space.
That's I should have used that in my column. Honestly, I think it was a very different, in other words, if I don't think they did, but if they did. So, I mean, the basic idea of Soldier Field was a modern architecture that was in counterpoint and a kind of dialogue, in my view, unsuccessful on the outside with the historic part. Clearly, the what's been done at Wrigley is conceptually different. In other words, it's new architecture that harmonizes with the old, and it looks like it's always been there.
Yes, it does.
In other words, even the scoreboards are in that kind of forest green with the yellow lettering that, you know, melds in with the stadium. And that was really the model at Fenway, that you know, there was a kind of comfort factor to bringing in this to what was new. So they went about it. They've done it in so many ways. You know, the Fenway model, they brought in Theo, they brought in some of the same architects who worked on Fenway. They brought in, you know, former Red Sox.
Yep.
So we're kind of like Fenway West.
I guess we are.
You could say, yeah.
So do you change your mind on which stadium is your favorite? Because they really all have great attributes.
There are, well, not all of them. I mean, you know, there are some, we were talking earlier that, you know, U.S. Cellular, when it opened, was a real disaster.
It was terrible.
It's gotten better.
And it's more fun for the family with the fundamentals and the funnel cakes for me.
Yeah, no, that's true. And the food is really good there.
It is.
Much better than Wrigley's. But
but the team, a little different.
I think that, you know, it's wonderful to wander through ballparks because they have, baseball parks in particular, have a unique flavor that is shaped by their city, and they're all slightly different, you know, whereas a football field is, you know, it's 100 yards and it's just, you know, it's generic.
Yeah.
So, you know, being in Fenway, you get the kind of raucous, hard-edged, you know, atmosphere. When you're in Pittsburgh at their new park, you get this wonderful view of the downtown skyline
it's
and the
beautiful.
Bridges across the river. When you're in Coors Field in Denver, you know, you get that Lodo lower downtown vibe, the, you know, the brick warehouse district. When you're in San Francisco, you know, you get McCovey Cove and the kind of craziness of San Francisco with a giant Coke bottle. And these are things I, you know, these are things that I think are really, these are good. I mean, some of the new stadiums honestly are more like stadiums than ballparks. In other words, I make a distinction between a kind of intimate two deck, you know, small ballpark like Wrigley, and Pittsburgh is like this, but some of the others are like essentially stadiums with like window dressing that makes them look like Wrigley. You know, they slapped on some brick and tried to make it cute and quirky and all that. And I mean, ultimately it's about the fans' experience. You know, you're sitting there the seats, you know, how close do you feel to the action? Can you hear what's going on? Do you sense like you're connected to the game? And do you also sense the special flavor of the city and the neighborhood or the area that you're in? Those are things that I think really color our experience of a baseball game and make these places memorable.
Yeah.
And it's why, you know, it obviously explains why the Cubs, through all of their travails, you know, over more than a century now, have been able to survive, because Wrigley was, as much as the team, the ballpark was the attraction.
Oh, yeah. No question about it. The one thing that goes away, and I don't know how you fix this, is when you build a new stadium, all of a sudden that feeling of history you get when you go into Boston or you go into Wrigley, certainly, there's no way to duplicate that.
There is no way to duplicate, but there are ways to make new traditions. And fans want... And also, I mean, if your stadium was like Cleveland is a great example. The Indians played in, I think, you know, one of those terrible 1960s stadiums. The new park, Progressive Field, which is actually no longer new. It's more than 20 years old.
Yeah.
Formerly Jacobs Field, now Progressive Field, is one of the better new ballparks. It's got, you know, it kind of has some of the flavor with the steelwork of the flats, that industrial area in Cleveland. I love the light poles there. They're very thin and they have these thin lights atop them. They're known in architectural circles as the toothbrush lights.
Yeah, right.
Because they're, you know, shaped like a toothbrush.
Yeah.
So, I mean, again, I think that, you know, these places are beloved because they are these kind of Edenic, ideally these kind of Edenic escapes, you know, from everyday life, the contours of everyday life. And yeah, they're noisier. They're more like rock arenas, you know, but it's still like, you know, they're fabulous. They're fabulous places to go.
Hopefully people will be back at Wrigley to watch some Cubbage. Fingers crossed.
Couldn't agree more. Couldn't agree more.
Thank you so much.
My pleasure. It was great to talk about baseball architecture and a good diversion right now.
Oh yeah,
what's been happening? Much needed. The field.
Thank you, Blair. Appreciate
All
it.
Right.
That's Blair
My
Kamen.
Pleasure. Good to talk
meet
to
him
you.
In the Chicago Tribune. Would you? We'll take a quick break and then Roan Annell will be in. Bill and Wendy, WGN.